It is 537 of the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. Kurt Geyer speaking.
Eric Hammond.
Doug Schmidt.
We're all in here. The studio looks a little different.
That's right. It's got a new painted wall.
Doug, you didn't say anything about the wall.
Looks great.
Do you like it better?
Yeah, oh yeah, way better.
I think we should paint that big red wall out there black, too.
Yeah, you should find someone to
hey,
do that.
Real question is, what's this wee shit? Because I don't paint.
Hey, Chris J came in and helped me paint this.
Who's we? You got a turd in your pocket?
All right, I'll paint it. Hire a bunch of midgets to come help me. No offense to any midgets listening.
It's a 13-foot wall.
hey, guys, hunting season is underway.
It is.
It's happening right now.
We are in almost 1 week of season. In real time, there's a cold front coming this weekend, and y'all motherfuckers better be hunting. Checking deer cask? I have been.
Better be wearing some hunt wear. It's going to be chilly.
It's going to be chilly. Nice. Real nice. It's going to be good.
It's going to feel like November.
It is. The first full weekend after a week of deer season is in, and I'm contemplating hunting in the morning.
Yeah, I hunted one already.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. He really doesn't want to eat that chip. He's hunting mornings already.
Well, this podcast, I think going in, there's a lot of great information in this podcast. I really enjoyed this episode with Gary. The dude knows a ton about tracking deer with dogs. I think you guys will learn a bunch. I think he clears up some misconceptions. Of course, there'll be somebody that always disagrees or agrees or whatever. But hope you enjoy this episode. Make you think about shot placement and tracking and all that stuff. The podcast is brought to you by Elite Archery.
That's right.
You guys know this. Title partner for Working Class Bowhunter. Very proud to be working with them. We're all shooting the Envision.
They've been doing work already this year, so hopefully put them through the ringer again.
We have been tipping shit over. It's a great feeling, isn't it?
Yep.
The podcast also brought to you by Huntworth Camo and Gear. We're rocking Huntworth. I have recently, from the elk hunt, been rocking that vest.
Have you?
I've never been a vest guy, but it was like one of those situations where you don't want to take as much gear with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's chilly in the mornings, gets warm during the day, and then chilly at night. And the vest is like the perfect solution for that.
Yeah.
And it's great for an archery hunter, you know?
It is for sure.
So,
vest is not a bad look either.
I like the vest. I'll never wear a vest to a bar, but a hunting vest is the move.
Larry's changed my mind.
I hear you. Huntworth, we have a code WCB15. If you want to try out Huntworth gear, they have a lot of great stuff. We're very proud of that partnership, and we love the gear, man. We really do. Podcast also brought to you by Old Barn Taxidermy. They have the G2 forms out now. If you are nowhere near an Old Barn Taxidermy location, ask your taxidermist if they can order a G2 form.
Just got my 8-pointer back, G2 form. Real nice.
There's probably 4 or 5 deer. Yeah, you're bringing that buck to the studio?
Yeah.
We probably have, that'll be like 6 then, deer on G2 forms in our studio. So they look great. We get tons of compliments on them. Your taxidermy is a lot like a tattoo.
It is.
People compliment you when you have a nice one, and people kind of cringe and don't even look at them when you got some bad ones.
Hate to see it.
It's a damn shame. Dude, nothing's worse than that. That's why guys' wives hate taxidermy. You get some bunk ass looking shit, and no wonder
they look good in the house.
Yeah, look good in the house.
No, not looking good.
The shit is this.
We're very proud. By the way, I seen a press release that we re-signed with Victory Archery. Like we're in the press. We're in the archery press. I didn't even send that link to anybody.
No, I didn't even see it.
Somebody else sent it to me. I didn't even know what was out there. It was like the Thermoseat press release. We re-signed with Thermoseat. We re-signed with Victory for everybody that wants
Who's
to know.
Who's doing this research?
The people, man.
The people. Hot damn.
I was getting to, we're very proud. We just re-signed with Loophole Optics. Very proud of that partnership as well. Top tier company, man. Great people.
Super proud.
Everything Loophole does is just the shit.
God,
it really is.
Their optics are great. Their rangefinders are great. Their performance eyewear is great. Their merch is great.
They can make anything, and I'm buying.
I'm rocking 12x50s right now.
Are you from your elk hunt?
BX4s. Yeah, I've been rocking them.
Oh, nice.
And I enjoy them. I like my 10x42s. You know, that's like the whitetail.
Yeah, optic, the go tos.
I just like the 12x50s. They're doing good. I like them.
Good.
I haven't been like, man, it's too much. You know, I'm enjoying it. I think because my eyesight's getting bad.
That could be it.
I don't know. Podcast also brought to you by Spy Point. My Spy Point cameras are going off right fucking now. I'm not kidding. I just got 3 photos in the last 8 minutes from three different locations. So that cold
Anything
front
good?
Is coming. Let's check.
Anything good?
Let's check. We got... Yep. We got a good buck coming out of one of my fields.
How big?
He's way out there. 140.
300 inches.
140.
Holy shit.
We got a little buck.
You say 300?
We got a doe in my food plot. Four pictures of the doe in the food plot. Check that out. I'm on the Big Time app. They have the Insiders Club. You can favorite photos. You can do HD and you can
Time
filter
out.
It back.
You said Big Time app.
I did?
Yeah.
Spy Point app. I'm at. I was looking at pictures
looking
of
at
a deer.
Big Time plot.
I actually was. I was looking at a deer in my Big Time
it
plot.
It leads us into our next sponsor.
Anyway, just Spy Point. This is working great. Yeah. New Flex,
Spy
great
Point
camera.
App.
And if you have Big Time, you put your Spy Point and your Big Time plot and you double down, brother. See what we did? These partnerships aren't by accident.
No.
You know?
They're meant for each other.
We picked people that would actually talk to us, and then we were like,
we crossing streams.
It'd be really great if we could work together because we're broke.
don't pull that.
We're broke, man. We are broke. Novix tree stands. I hung a Hilo. I hung an Echo on the Geyer farm. Lee Herr, the cult leader, came out and helped out with that, actually. The dude just never doing anything.
No, what does he do?
Hey, you want to come check out this property with me? Yeah, I'll be there in 3 hours.
He runs a cult, dude.
I guess if you're a cult leader, you literally
don't have to do anything.
Yeah, you do whatever you want.
Dude, Novix is the shit. I like the stick quiver, man.
I haven't used it yet.
I'm a big fan. I'm a big, big fan.
I don't think the full lengths fit in them, do they?
Yeah, they do. I got some in right now. The doubles. You can make the double steps fit in them. You just got to be creative.
Offset them.
Yeah, you can be creative. But well, I got, I have a pre-hung Hilo, I have a pre-hung Echo, but then I keep a Hilo ready to go, like one in the chamber for when you got to make a move. Nothing's worse if you leave your mobile set up in a tree and you're like, I got to go pull it to make a move.
Yep.
It's just more intrusion than you need. So that's a tip. Use code WCB22, save yourself some money.
We'll be hanging some Echoes here Friday.
Yep. I like it. All right, boys, let's get to this episode.
Let's do it.
I'm Chase Rolson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Mutt from Bow Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast. Kurt Geyer is here.
Eric Hammond.
Doug Schmidt.
And we have a special guest in the studio, Gary Blessing, the partner, you say partner to Diesel the Deer Tracking Dog?
Partner's a good word.
Employee, fellow employee.
I'm his boss.
Co-worker.
I'm his boss.
The supervisor.
Yeah.
So we met last fall. Yeah. You were tracking a deer for a buddy, yeah, and it just kind of lined up. You're like, man, we should do a podcast. And basically it was like, yeah, we definitely should. And here you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making the drive.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
You're Illinois based.
I am. I'm out of Morris.
Okay. So people that are listening in the Midwest, we're just jumping right into it here.
Sure.
And we'll just unravel more as we go, right? We'll be efficient here. There's a lot to cover. We're going to go through Patreon questions. We're going to go through some Instagram questions. Patreon first. Shout out to you guys there. You have a deer tracking dog. You track deer. Is all over the Midwest fair to say?
I wouldn't say all over the Midwest. I travel as much as my schedule and time allows.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in Iowa. Last year, I checked a deer in Iowa, I checked a deer in Wisconsin, Indiana. And the only place I really don't go is Southern Illinois. We've got a lot of trackers down there already. Yeah. So I don't get down there much. But I'm definitely 2, 3, 4 hours is not out of the question.
That's not out of the question. Yeah. Okay. Pull your mic up just a little bit. Is there like an organization? You said, you know, there's a lot of trackers down south. Is there like a place where guys can find deer trackers, or is it just random, or is there like a group you guys are part of?
Yeah, there's actually two groups. The larger nationally based group is United Blood Trackers.
Mm-hmm.
They were founded many, many years ago, and really the impetus behind organized tracking in the United States, and they did a lot to promote the legality of tracking in a lot of states across the United States. But now what's popping up now is these state networks, and it's really just the trackers in that state getting together and organizing themselves.
Like self-organizing the community.
Yeah, and really we do a lot of self-policing. There's some good tracking teams out there, and there's some honest tracking teams out there, and there's not some honest tracking teams out there.
So can we break that down for people if they're looking, like, what are some red flags for someone that needs a deer tracked? Like, what makes...
Oh, boy, we are jumping right in.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Well, meat and taters, man.
Well, hey, there's going to be a lot of meat and taters in this one, I think, and maybe some uncomfortable truths a little bit,
sure,
too, right?
100%.
Hey, that's what you're here for.
Yep.
he's like, all right, I guess so.
Here we go.
They're, you know... As the tracking sport, I guess, if you want to call it, evolves, there's a lot of people getting into the sport for a variety of reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some are, one of the big things they're getting into into it now is because, number one, they think training a tracking dog is easy and they can make a ton of money.
Mm. Right.
And neither is the case.
Wrong ways to do it.
I can tell you that the amount of time that I spend and the amount of expenses that and the effort that I go through and the amount of money that I take in, I'd rather work at McDonald's. if you break it down.
It's for the money.
Not Burger King.
<You're> saying, right? They need help.
Right. So one of the things that the state network does is sort of weed out the bad apples, if you will.
Yeah. Sure.
It allows us to, you know, any member of the Illinois Deer Trackers Network, the IDTN, we make them submit an application. And on that application is a couple questions. Are you in good standing in the state of Illinois? How many deer have you recovered? How many years you've been tracking? What kind of dog you have? And then we can look at that application and go, they found 44 deer in their first year.
Right.
Something
fishy.
That's probably not right. And so we get on the phone with them, start asking questions. So at the end of the day, what we're offering the public with the IDTN is a vetted team that we've gone through that said, hey, these people are who they say they are, mm-hmm. and they're decent folks.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much a job interview for the tracking dog, pretty much.
Pretty much. I mean, we have all levels of ability within that group too. We've got teams that have never tracked a deer before, and this is going to be their first year. And we've got teams with 600 recoveries.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we're not saying you're going to get the best tracking dog in the world. We're saying you're going to get a good team. It's going to work hard. It's going to be honest. And they are who they say they are.
They're going to do the best job for you possible. Yep.
And the other thing too is, you know, like our first year trackers and our trackers in training, what we label them as, we don't allow them to charge. So if you want to be part of the network, you have to work for tips and gas money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, it's just like anything. If this is your first year, a construction company, and you never built a deck before, you're going to charge some guy full price to build a deck?
Right.
Probably not.
How long did we lose our ass podcasting?
No shit.
So right. How did you get into deer tracking and the dogs and all that?
So I have been deer hunting since I was 10, so 41 years now.
Mm-hmm.
I've been bow hunting probably 35 of those years. I was really serious about it. Probably to the point I was, you know, probably unhealthy.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's all I live for. Every day after
we know
work.
We know the feeling.
Yeah. Every day was shooting bows and moving tree stands and scouting from the truck and watching, and doing everything that I could to get on that deer that, you know, that I wanted to kill. And it, to be honest with you, it became work. It became the last 5 years that I was like seriously doing it. It was more work than fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the last year I killed, I shouldn't say the last year I killed because I got really lucky last year. But when I was hunting, quote unquote, full time, I killed a 155 inch 10 that I wanted to kill. I wrapped my tag around it and I walked back to the house and I thought, what just happened?
Mm-hmm.
This not feeling the same way as it felt before. And right about that time, my wife was actually starting to get into hunting, and I was with her one night, and this is well before the dog. I was with her one night in the tree stand, and she shot a really nice 155-inch, actually eight-pointers, really beautiful deer. And I knew the shot was high and back, liver, no exit. We looked for that deer for 4 days. I never found it. I called a couple guys with dogs that I knew off of United Blood Trackers. One said he didn't want to come because, women's bows are not capable of killing deer.
Mm. Oh, boy.
Okay, whatever.
Way to be a dick.
Yeah,
right. So long story short, I could never get a dog there. And something clicked in my head one day and said, hey, why don't I get a tracking dog? I can still be in the hunting game. I can find big deer all the time.
Right.
Right? And I can still do this without actually hunting, but still be involved in the game. Mm-hmm. And that's,
That's where it all started, huh?
Yeah, 2 years later, I had a puppy in my hands and had no idea what to do with it.
That's awesome. What kind of dog is the most common for deer tracking?
I don't think there is a common.
Okay.
Your hounds are obviously popular just because tracking is in their DNA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got your Bavarian Mountain Hounds are becoming really popular, which what Diesel is.
Mm-hmm.
Your Bloodhounds are popular, and they've been commercialized a lot. So when guys think of good tracking dogs, they automatically think Bloodhound,
mm-hmm.
right? And Bloodhounds are obviously popular and very talented dogs too. But we see there are some labs out there that are doing some fantastic work. And surprisingly, I've got a buddy, Dean Muthig in Wisconsin, who trains tracking dogs for a living,
mm-hmm.
and tracks for a living. And, he's had four or five labs in this year,
mm.
and all of them have been just lights out.
Really?
And they're easy to train, and they're good in the house. And, it's not like having a bloodhound in your house is a lot different than a lab, right?
Yeah. Right, yeah.
But we even see just odd breeds, a wire-haired dachshund, 25 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
When you see a 65-year-old guy carrying his tracking dog to your track, I can imagine what's going through your minds. I'm telling you what, those are talented dogs.
Yeah.
And, we've got everything from mutts to coon hounds to GSPs, anything. It's not necessarily breed. Breed will give you a better chance of producing a better dog, but it's the actual dog and the drive in the dog. If the dog wants to go from A to B, I don't care what it is, you're going to have a decent tracking dog.
Right. Very cool. That's good to know.
That Tracker John, he uses a smaller dog, don't he?
I don't know.
Tracker John's a bloodhound guy from what I know.
Oh, yeah. I've seen he's got bloodhounds.
Yeah.
I've seen guys on old episodes like Road Trips and stuff, like somewhere in Pike County, the guy had a little wire hair thing, which I always remember. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was just the dog.
Right.
But no, it was they're tracking dog.
Oh, no joke.
Yeah.
Wire hair dachshunds, what they're actually bred to do is they're actually bred to hunt underground.
And
they will go in a badger hole and come out with the badger.
Yeah.
Wow. That's horrifying.
Horrifying.
But awesome.
Think about that.
Yeah, that's scary. That's cool.
No, but I've seen some wire-haired dachshunds do some incredible work.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, when you see a guy carrying it, you're like, oh man,
what's
the deal? If you don't know, you don't know.
You think it was a joke. You're like, what the hell is this guy
doing? Yeah, and deer tracking. I've never had. I guess some people have. I don't know. Is there a negative outlook on it with the hunting community at all? I guess I've never experienced that, but is there?
I don't know.
I don't see why not.
I wonder if some of the, and this may or may not be correct, but I wonder if some of the traditional crowd doesn't like the use of a dog.
From our experience on the internet, they don't really like anything. Of course, we're talking about the 2% that are just dickheads on the internet. We're not talking about the real, most of them are.
I've never heard anyone say anything negative about a tracking dog.
I think the most
you.
Thing you hear is the dicks are just you should make a better shot. That's your fault.
If you need a dog, then, you suck.
Then you shouldn't be hunting.
Yeah, you could knock the top out of the heart on a deer, and people are still going to say you shot it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just the internet.
But I haven't heard of too many negative uses. I don't know. In off-lead states, maybe?
Off-lead is a no leash or...
Yeah, so, states can be on-lead or off-lead, and that's designated by the laws within the state.
Mm-hmm.
So your southern states tend to be off-lead, your bigger, there's a bigger chance for a dog to cross a property line, maybe, or...
Well, a lot of those southern states, it's legal to hunt deer with dogs, too.
Oh, for sure.
And not all of them, I'm sure, but some of them.
Right.
Some of them teams have catch dogs.
Oh, no kidding.
Oh, no joke. If you hit a deer in the leg, say in Florida... you're going to put your tracking dog and your catch dog, and you're going to let them out of the box, and they will find the deer.
Wow.
And you're not going to walk up to a live deer.
Jeez. See, I don't know if I like that.
I don't. Me personally.
But if it's wounded and it's going to die.
What's considered wounded.
That's right.
And going to die. Who's in charge of that?
It's a very gray area.
That is a gray area.
Round table quick. Doug, how do you feel about that?
I don't know.
It's a little pass, savage to me.
Pass.
Take a chance. Take a chance here. I'll do it
I
with
don't
you.
Think
it,
I don't think that's right.
Eric?
I'm kind of in the same boat. That's kind of weird to me.
I don't like it. How do you feel?
I think there's a fine line between tracking and
if you hit a
hunting.
Buck, like you said, in the leg, and it would had a chance of surviving, then the dog just...
Kill it.
No. I'm not an off-lead guy, but...
What's Illinois? Is it on-lead?
On-lead. Yeah, dog has to be on-lead.
What's Iowa?
On-lead.
Okay.
Yeah. Most of your Midwest states, I don't know any states, Midwest and North, that are off-lead.
Okay.
You know, Georgia, Alabama, Texas, Florida. I don't know if any of the Carolinas are or not, but most of your southern states are off-lead just because of the size of the property.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
You get on a ranch in Texas, whether your dog's on-lead or off-lead, it's going to get it out of the zip code.
Me. Yeah, right.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, we found deer that, you know, or people in our community have found deer that have been shot like below the ankle. And why did that deer die?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No idea. Did it die of a heart attack? I don't know.
A nerve deal or, you know, it's like, what is it?
I don't know.
Interesting.
I mean, so, you know, who's to say a deer's going to die and deer's going to live?
Big gray area there.
Huge.
Very wide in the gray.
I think me personally, and this is not, you know, anything negative about anybody in our community, but I think if the deer's going to die, it should be at the hands of a hunter.
For sure.
I didn't even know that was a thing till you just said it.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
Holy smokes.
Oh, yeah. And I could start naming types of dogs, but I don't want to get people in.
Yeah.
No, that's fine. You know what I'm saying?
Catch dogs, like it's a red area for me, son.
You know, I look at, and I may be wrong on this, but before talking to you right now, I've always looked at, like, you always see the guys who get shed dogs. Like, yeah, I got the shed dog, and ends up just being a spoiled house dog. That's fine. Yeah. But then you got guys like, I got a dog, and it could track. And then you know they've never done any track jobs with it. But as soon as you wound a deer, you want me to bring my dog out? And for me, I'm like, no, because and then maybe this is wrong. It could be. Mm-hmm. But my thought on it is, your dog's never done this for real. He's just going to run around my entire property and screw things up worse than if I took my time and just tracked it versus a dog with no experience that just wants to play and bark and chase deer anyway.
Yeah. And then to top that off, let's say that inexperienced dog comes in or no experienced dog comes in, runs all over the place. It's been on the scent line. Now it's got that deer in the bottom of its feet. You've been all over it. You've been on that scent line. Now the deer's on the bottom of your feet. Everywhere you guys walked, it's just mucked up that track bad.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to call in now, I got to find this deer. If you want to call in a more experienced team, now that a more experienced team has to deal with all that.
Right. Yeah, it's just muddy.
It's noise that you didn't have to wade through.
So you're advising against the buddy that's like, my dog needs to learn, and you shot a 180. Maybe not learn on the 180 for his first track?
No, I definitely wouldn't do that. I mean, if it's two buddies and you know you're not going to call in a dog or another dog's not available, you really got nothing to lose.
Right. I hear you.
But if there is another dog available, that's your first choice. I would not let your buddy take Fido off the porch and, you know.
Yeah.
There are very few dogs in our community, I will say, that are completely naturals. Like, oh, my dog just, you know, followed a track one day and he's been lights out ever since. It doesn't happen that way.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Jordans aren't, they're born, but they're also made.
Right.
You have to give that dog a foundation. You got to give them exposure.
It's yeah, work like for them and do everything.
Right. Makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yep.
So if someone listens like, man, I'd really like to get into this. I want to get a dog. It's always been something I wanted to do. Is the first step just get a hold of you guys and get some advice before he even gets going?
100%. You know, talk to a veteran team. Talk to multiple veteran teams. Join the United Blood Trackers. Ask some questions. Hey, what dog's right for me? And I always tell guys, if you really want a dog, number one, make sure it's a lifelong commitment. And if you really want to make a tracking dog, it's going to change your life because it's not an hour a week. It's you're working obedience every day. You're training you know, on track when the dog is young multiple times a day for weeks, and then, you know, it's stretched out. But then you have to give, you know, make a commitment to that dog to give him the tracks that he needs to get better.
Right.
And it's a huge commitment that a lot of people just aren't willing to make.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as dog selection goes, I always advise people to get a dog that fits your lifestyle. Don't necessarily, you don't have to have a Ferrari to go get groceries. I mean, it's nice, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, living with, you know, Diesel being a Bavarian Mountain Hound, living with Diesel 9 months out of the year when we're not tracking, it's no joke.
Yeah.
He needs to be
exercised
and stimulated and you know, and just, it's not, he's not going to lay in the couch for you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if he is, you're not going to like your house when you come home.
Right.
Right. So, you know, and it's like, you know,
I'm thinking getting a Basset Hound for blood trail, and how would that be?
I've seen two Basset Hounds track, and they were both lights out.
I just think if I were to get a dog right now, a Basset Hound, they just look like my style of dog.
Just tripping over their ears.
I got a Beagle.
Nice. Oh, there's plenty of Beagles around.
Hey.
Basset Hounds just look like they want to drink a beer with you.
Oh, they don't get in a hurry to do anything.
No, hell
it's
no.
Like, oh, this is what
my
we're doing?
Guy.
Cool. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Look at my crooked feet and my long ears.
He's like, track the deer or not, I don't give a shit.
What are you going to do, man?
Hey, I'll be over here taking a nap.
Yeah, you got a stoner freaking dog.
Just let me know when you're ready.
Yeah. See, that'd be kind of fun, you know, maybe. But
you need a Basset Hound.
The biggest thing funny, that I see is, you know, like 100-pound women getting a 120-pound bloodhound. It's like that dog is going to rule you.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. You know,
for sure. Yeah.
Get something that fits your lifestyle better.
Diesel's like a perfect size dog.
He is, and he's actually a little big for a Bavarian.
Oh, really?
He's 55, which is the upper limits, but, you know, part of something with that, he's still intact and he's been fed raw since, you know, since he's been very young. So I think he's got a little bit more muscle structure than some of the other Bavarians.
Yeah, more sure, opportunity sure. to be healthy, I guess. And
yep.
I mean, he's a stud. He's in shape, of course, you know. And,
oh, he drives me to the ground.
It was cool. It was cool watching him work from, you know, our buddy was supposed to be in here, but we were talking about the experience, but couldn't make it. We might have talked about it on a past episode. I can't remember or not, but
I think we did.
Yeah, we may have. Todd had you come out. That's where we met.
Yep.
It's just cool seeing. I mean, I've never seen a deer track a dog track a deer before, but, you know, we've been out coon hunting with dogs and duck hunting and stuff. It's just so cool to see dogs work.
Yeah.
It's so neat.
That was my first experience ever to it. And for anybody is going to be in my, for the first time seeing a dog work, it's kind of funny in your head when you first watch, because you're not sure what to think. So you maybe watch the dog, and this is just like my first, like, in the process. It was like, okay, is this dog really on something, or is he just doing dog things? And then yeah. I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm just kind of like watching and try to stay out of his way, right? You know, yep. Be respectful, let the dog have the trail. And then it's like, I don't know what this dog. Oh, he found blood. Oh shit, he's acting. And then it goes, you know, oh, he lost it. And I'm like, what is this dog doing? And oh shit, he found more blood.
Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, this is real.
You're just somebody up and down. Sure. Like, this dog's full of shit. Well, I know he knows what he's doing.
If you've never seen it done before, you don't know. I don't know. I didn't know the process.
Right.
You know. So if you ever do hire somebody legitimate, I imagine someone seeing it for the first time, you're hopeful to find the deer and then the right. ups and the downs and you're wondering. And so I imagine that's common for people when they first see it, right?
100%. Everybody thinks it's like, you know, it's magic or whatever, but you know, and then there's the group of people that think it's, he's just taking his dog for a walk.
Right.
You know, the talk at the truck about, you know, I trust my dog. I know what he looks like when he's on deer, when he's not on the line, blah, blah, blah. You know, is that all BS? Is this guy really knows what he's talking about? And you know, and that's, I think that's healthy skepticism if somebody hasn't seen it before.
Yeah, that's fair, right?
And especially when, you know, when we've gone 3/4 of a mile and I haven't showed you blood yet, but I know in my head my dog is on me, on your deer, and we're probably going to find it.
Right.
We just keep the faith and keep up with spot of blood.
Yeah.
And you go, right here.
Son of a bitch.
and then the look on their face after they see it, they're like, holy cow. I'll right. follow this dog till the end of the earth.
Right. Yeah. It's all you need right there once yeah. you see it.
But I get to do that 100 times a year.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
You know, so that's, you know, but that's really what it all comes down to is reading your dog. And if I think he's on, we're going until you say, we're done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, if you can't show hunter sign, it's sometimes it's a tough sell.
Yeah, for sure.
I can imagine. But it's almost like you can kind of smirk a little, knowing like, well, if there is a sign to be found, he's going to find it. You know,
hopefully we're going to show it to you. Hopefully somebody sees it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. There's sign there that we don't see.
Right.
But it's that one little pin drop of blood that could mean the big difference. You know, like on your friend's track, that blood that we found down by the creek, at one point in time, I wiped my head and I went, oh, thank God we found that spot of blood. But then I think there was some contention there, whether if it was that deer's blood or not. I knew it in my head that it was. And that's another tough, well, no, my deer would have never went this way. Your deer went this way.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it was. And, you know, we're like, man, that's crazy. It was just wild. It was cool to see. So we've talked lightly about deer track, never a full focus like this. Well, maybe kind of a little bit, but
nothing this in depth.
Yeah, what is like the? I know it's different based on like the shot of the deer and if the deer lives or not. You can't control that. Like you can't really control the recovery rate because the deer might live or whatever it is. But like out of 100 deer in an average year, how many are you finding with a dog?
Great question, and it's probably getting back to the question that you asked earlier. Is, you know, what could a hunter look for in a tracking team? Well, here, and we touched on the fact that there's off-lead and on-lead states. Off-lead dogs and off-lead teams are going to find more deer than on-lead teams, just in the simple fact, like you said, a dog is unimpeded by a handler on an off-lead state, and they can catch the deer and bay the deer until the hunter gets there and kills the deer or the dog kills the deer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In a non-lead state, I'm not chasing after deer. I'm 51 years old, and I'm not going to run through the woods.
Yeah. We're running.
Chasing after a deer, right?
Yeah.
We're
running.
Show up in tracking shoes.
and here's the really big takeaway, because this is what we keep seeing out of teams that are sort of not so honest. And I'm just being honest with this. If a team takes all the calls that they get, in other words, I don't screen my calls. At the end of the year, my recovery percentage is going to be 40% plus or minus 5%. Now, does that mean we're leaving 55 and 60% of the deer in the woods? Absolutely not. 55 to 60% of the deer that we track aren't dead when we track them.
Right.
Yeah. So if you have a tracker online or you talk to and they're advertising 85% success rate, 90% success rate, everybody that knows what they're talking about goes, oh, geez, here we go again. You know, they think it's better because my recovery percentage is more.
Right.
If you flip a coin, right, 100 times in a row, you may or may not get 50%.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You may get 60-40, you may get 70-30, you may get 50-50. But if you flip the coin long enough, you're going to get 50-50. So if I take enough tracks, my recovery percentage is going to be 40% plus or minus 5%, period. Now, there's three things that contribute to that. Number one is a team either doesn't know what a recovery is, and it may sound kind of funny. So in other words, let's say that I'm tracking and I jump a deer. I jump the deer. I see the hole in the side. I jump the deer. It goes over the neighbor's fence. There are some teams that will, you know, take that as a quote-unquote recovery.
Mm.
Mm. Most teams, the vast majority of teams, think a recovery is my dog sticks his nose on the deer that we set out to track and it's dead and we put him on a tailgate. That's a recovery. So second thing is a team that is advertising higher than normal success rates is they screen their calls heavily. They're only going to go on the high percentage hits. They're not going to take the shoulder shots. They're not going to take the neck shots, the front on shots. They don't even go. If you mention liver or gut, they're in the truck.
Gotcha.
Here we go.
They're in the truck, as in they're on their way.
They're on their way because it's, you know, liver and gut hits tend to be easy for dogs.
Gotcha. Right?
And they're higher percentage.
Because of the smell of the hit, usually?
I think there's extra.
And it's fatal.
And it's 100% fatal. And that's another interesting concept. The dogs absolutely know when a hit is fatal and when they're not, when it's not. My dog can tell you within probably a few hundred yards, I've got a pretty good idea on whether that we're going to find the deer or not.
Interesting.
Man, you know, I love that you don't screen your calls. I love the honesty about it because we've heard different on the podcast on success rate of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that, you know, you're being completely honest. You have no reason to be like, well, Diesel find 90% of the deer out there because
I don't have to.
Yeah, you don't have to be. So I think there's a big learning, valuable, educational point to that for our listeners and us.
Because, if he wouldn't have told me that, I would have went with the guy that has 90%.
100%. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
And
Eric.
Unrealistic. but no,
I mean, for real, though, like, this guy has better odds than over this. Sure. You know,
and if you don't 40%. Know any different, why wouldn't you go with the 90% guy?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, if you don't know, you don't know.
Right.
But, man, that's valuable to know, especially coming in. You know, by the time this episode launches, deer season's just underway or about to become underway here in the Midwest. You're a great guy. You know, find your page on Facebook. Go, just follow it now. And then also whatever other organization has a Facebook page. But Diesel the Deer Tracking Dog, we'll link all this in the episode description. So just you can relax. Don't go find it right now. Go back to the episode description, click on there, and then give it a like. So what I think we should do now, because we have some Patreon questions and we have some listener submitted questions, and that's going to roll us into a lot more of these topics and then branch it out even further and things we want to do.
Sure.
So before we just read questions and go, we already answered that. We'll just branch out. And these are candid. You haven't seen any of these questions. Mm-hmm. I haven't even read all of them. I've just skimmed through them. We kind of like to do it that way here on the show because, you know, we're being honest. We're not skipping over an uncomfortable question or this for convenience of us looking cool.
Sure.
So
We're not screening
our questions.
There you go.
Like he doesn't screen his track job.
I got a quick question for you. Like if say you can't go on a track, do you work with guys or like say it's out of your area? Like, hey, I can't go on this track, but here's this guy.
Yeah. And that's the other benefit of having a state network. It's got network in its name for a reason.
Right.
Let's say that we're all trackers and we're all in the network together. And if I know that, you know, I've got a track in Aledo that I can't get to, hey, I know so-and-so's out there. I pick up the phone and say, hey, I've got what we think is a liver shot deer shot yesterday. His name is John Smith. Here's his phone number.
Yeah, it's very cool.
That networking helps us tremendously. In fact, I think that's sort of pseudo how you found me last year. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of reached out to social media, but... Yeah, if we can, you know, there's 29 teams on the map. There's 37 teams that are part of the network.
That's awesome.
And we're working together for you guys, the hunters.
Yeah.
And it really helps to, and we use a WhatsApp group. WhatsApp.
WhatsApp is awesome, actually.
So we'll throw tracks out on there. And if I get one in Peoria that I can't get to, I'll just say, hey, John Smith, somebody's looking for a track in Peoria. Who can do it?
Yeah.
And if that's kick ass.
Yeah. And if nobody can respond, nobody can respond, but at least we tried.
Yeah. At least you're actually putting the feelers out there and trying to get a dog there for that person, for that hunter.
We want to see that deer in that truck. We don't want to see deer left in the woods.
So I have another question, but I know it's been asked. So I'm going to wait to give this person their answer before their question that it goes right in what we're talking about. So let's just get into it here.
Okay.
And at the end of all the questions, if we don't cover something, we feel like we need to, like, by all means, you know, let's go there. So we're on Patreon. I did reach out on this one. Patreon first, Instagram second. Of course, shout out to our Patreon family.
Yep.
You guys are the shit. You the guys homies. Take your support to us a step further, and we're going to get some exclusive podcasts out for you here. We might do an exclusive podcast after this one tonight into some beers, you know what I mean?
whoa.
And Gary, you're more than welcome to stick around for that if you'd like, but you'd probably be staying here at the studio, which you're more than welcome to. So just think about that.
I'd be honored to stay.
Okay.
Oh, hey. Okay. Awesome.
It's going to get wild. You might regret it. All right. Parker Barron, shout out to you, buddy. Do most of the deer that are tracked become badly hit from bad shot selection or broadhead failure? I've been told by a tracker to use a fixed head. I disagree. Thanks, guys.
Throw me under the bus.
Oh, boy.
Here we go.
So, okay.
Thanks,
so,
Parker.
Interesting topic. I would say most deer are tracked due to bad shot selection, period. Do we see broadhead failure? Yes. Do we see more broadhead failure with mechanicals? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Am I a fixed big head fan? A big fixed head fan? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of a moderately heavy arrow, a fixed head shot out of a tune bow.
That's very fair.
That's fair.
I don't, you know, if guys want to launch 900 grain arrows at deer, I mean, that's okay. And I'm not knocking that by any means, but, you know, I think we were talking before, but, you know, arrow weight and single bubble heads and all that stuff, it's not a crutch for bad shot selection. You have to get the deer in a good position to start the process.
So you're telling me If I have a heavy arrow, I can't just be a jack wagon and shoot it wherever I want?
No, you can't. Well, you can, but you'd still be a jack wagon.
You shouldn't do it.
Ethically,
it's not recommended.
You'd be calling him a lot.
A heavy arrow is not an excuse for poor shot selection or bad ethical behavior.
Bad shots happen. Poor shot selection
shouldn't
is on the hunter.
100%.
Yes. Do you see arrows, because there's kind of that, there's a niche group, and I'm not against it. I'm not necessarily, I agree with it, right? But I fall into the category, I shoot a heavy enough arrow. Mm-hmm. I'm not the guy that's like, I got a 900 grain arrow. Right. Suck my D if you don't agree. Right. I'm not that guy.
Suck my D if you don't agree. That's a t-shirt right there.
I didn't mean, I'm a genius. I don't even know it.
You're a poet. You didn't even know
I'm
it.
I'm a poet. You're a goddamn poet. But do you see, and I don't know, maybe you haven't or you don't know, have you seen arrows so heavy that they just are just lacking behind like an animal's reaction when it comes to making a poor shot?
Oh, there's definitely. I pulled up to a track 2 years ago, and a guy, he says, hey, can you just hold my bow for a second while I cross this fence? And I held it, and I look at the pin gaps on his sight, and they were like an inch and a half apart. And I look at the quiver real quick, and I'm like, holy cow, what are you shooting? Like rebar?
Rebar.
His pin gaps are an inch apart. Well, he shoots a single pin, his sight tapes like it's only up right. 30 yards.
10 to 30, or pages. 20 to 30 is like this.
It's pages. He's got to stick it in the lock.
Yeah, click a new wheel on to go to 40.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Now, you know, then then distance becomes absolutely critical at that stage. And I mean, are there times where a 900 green arrow with single bevel head is going to save your butt? Yeah.
You're shooting Cape Buffalo.
Yeah, but not really in what we do.
Yeah.
I'd rather see a guy put it where it belongs than not. I don't care how you get there.
For sure.
Put it where it belongs.
Makes sense. For the record, I'm shooting 480 green arrows. Yeah. I think that's right where I want to be.
Yeah. The biggest thing that we see leading to tracking dogs is lack of penetration. Mm. Why is there lack of penetration? Just being honest, mechanical heads, untuned equipment.
Yeah, that's
shoot fair. Shoot a straight arrow, and put it where it belongs. And using either head, you're probably okay. A fixed head's going to bail you out when a mech might not.
Right? You're going to wish you had a fixed blade more than you wish you had a mechanical. Usually,
that's
for sure.
Is that fair?
That's my opinion.
That's a fair statement.
I mean,
that's my opinion. I'm not knocking anybody that uses mechs. Oh,
we're not either. We use both.
Yeah. But
if you hit it to your back. That's kind of when you're like, man, I wish I had a expandable.
A big
cut.
You know, 2.5 inch broad, sure. But I can guarantee you my Slick Trick run through the guts of a deer is going to kill it just as fast as
yeah,
it's going to lay up and
do you
die
know we shot Slick Trick? Oh, did you say that just to
oh, no. Make us feel good? I shot Slick Tricks before they were even on the market.
Everybody, dude, Slick Trick, we've known about Slick Trick for a long time because we're in that family's outdoor group, yep, and stuff. But we've been running into more people this year,
yeah,
that believe in Slick Trick broadheads organically without us talking to them. And the African guys.
South Africa, yeah. Yeah.
They've actually been around for a really, really long time.
They went and picked up more Slick Tricks for us,
yeah,
in Africa.
Yeah.
They got them in Africa. I didn't think you can get a gallon of milk there. And they go and get Slick Trick fixed blades.
I'll have to bring over the original package. Remember that? I've sent you guys a picture. Larry gave them to me, but it's like,
oh, I don't remember
the
that.
OG packaging for the Slick Trick broadheads.
Oh, I don't remember
it's
that.
It's super cool.
I love their names. But that's a great question, right? You know, Parker opened that up to a lot of, I think, great topics, great thoughts.
Definitely points of interest, for sure.
Points of interest.
Yeah. You know, if you're talking with your buddy or a group of buddies with a bunch of beers around a campfire, that topic is going to get heated fast.
Yeah. There could be a fist fight around the
for sure.
But you know,
I'd be catching a two blade.
We're not here to do.
Don't worry, it won't hurt you.
What did that treat?
Hit him in the shoulder, he'll be fine. He'll be patched up by tomorrow. Hey, Doug, hand me one of the ice cold beers, will you? Uh-huh. Gary, would you like another beer?
Sure.
You can boss us around, by the way.
No, I won't do that.
Your family here. Paul Soretta, big supporter, man. Shout out to you. Thanks for the question. Paul writes, tracking in the rain or snow, what's too much moisture? Also, a lot of hunters like to get work done in the woods right before a rain. Outside of food plots, we are not washing away our scent like we think we are.
Bad sunning conditions is hot, dry, and windy. Good sunning conditions are wet, cool, and calm.
Mm.
If I've got a 20-hour-old line and it's supposed to rain at 3 o'clock, I want to go after the rain. I don't want to go before. The scent, think of this in moisture and scent. You've got a drop of blood on your countertop mm-hmm. in your kitchen. It's going to dry up and shrivel and crack, right? If you put 6 or 8 drops of water on that, what happens to that blood spot? It's going to open back up. It's going to spread out. And all of a sudden, it's going to start emitting odor again. So I would much rather track in the rain or after rain, or if there's dew in the ground after the frost melts, that's when the dogs are probably going to do their best work.
Wow. That's totally good information, yeah. man.
Yep.
Okay, it makes sense, though. When you break it down that way, it makes sense. In yeah. my head, I always thought,
totally
if I got work to do in the woods, I'll go out because the rain's going to rinse everything off.
I have never, now with my dog, now there's a point where there's going to be enough moisture, enough rain, that it will wash the scent away. It depends on the scent that's on the ground, what the ground conditions are, how much moisture, what the dog is doing, you know, what kind of dog is it, you know.
It's probably a different dog. I mean
it's up in the air in terms of what the correct answer is. But, you know, I've seen diesel track after 2 inches of rain and knock it out of the park like nothing ever happened.
So when a guy shoots a deer at night and it gets dark and he's waiting for you to call him back if you can make it or not, and then it starts to just lightly drizzle, he should be excited yes. that there's a little moisture versus no moisture.
100%.
So that's a good thing.
100%. And and like I said before, if there's dew or frost, that's even better. Let's wait till that dew comes off, and then
opposite of it, because we're not thinking in a dog's perspective. Yeah. We're thinking it's going to wash the blood away, which is correct.
Visibly,
right. But if you have a dog in the equation, you're like, okay, it's a total 180.
Here's a controversial...
Damn, that's fun.
It is.
A controversial topic. You know, I was always, when I first started hunting, when I was really getting into it, I was watching VHS tapes. There was no social media. We didn't have internet phones. You took a picture with a disposable camera if you had one.
Right.
So... like a lot of the myths that I grew up hunting with is, you know, like, in the magazines and stuff, is move your tree stands in the rain. Well, now that I've seen what I've seen with my dog, I'm not moving tree stands in the rain. I'm going to stay inside and I'll move it after.
Hot and dry is better.
Yeah. Think about hot and dry and wind and windy. I'd rather move a tree stand then. There's going to be less sun on the ground.
Man,
and
that's think about such this, good though. Information.
You know, as good as tracking dogs are in moisture, a deer's nose is 4 times better than a tracking dog.
Which is mind-blowing.
That's crazy.
What are you going to get away with?
Not much.
Wouldn't you just like to have like a dog nose or a deer nose for one day?
I think it would be terrible. It would be horrifying.
Wouldn't it? This is an honest statement. I would trade everything that I have right now to be able to talk to my dog for one day and get answers.
Oh, just like so he could talk back to you?
Yeah, just so we can communicate about... what do you need? What are you smelling? To be able to, because it's all speculation, right?
For sure. How stimulated? I feel like you'd just be so stimulated that you'd go nuts as a human brain.
Oh, 100%.
You know, if you're a dog brain, that's what you do. But
yeah,
I think you throw that sensory on a human brain,
right?
And explode. I think we go insane.
Yeah,
like I think that's where, like, yeah, you go into a mental asylum.
It'd be weird. It'd be kind of cool though. Give me one day.
I'd try it.
Oh, for sure.
100%.
A deer nose?
Give me 2 hours.
I would trade everything to be able to talk to my dog for one day on tracks.
And have a beer.
Oh, wouldn't it be cool?
Smoke a cigar on a car table with your dog?
It'd be freaking awesome.
That would be cool.
Dude, yeah, I just find out my dog hates me.
You're a piece of shit.
He's like, listen, you've been doing this wrong for years.
Your dog just walks out of the room. Nerd.
Can you imagine talking to your wife if you could smell like a dog? Would not be good.
Oh boy.
It'd be good. I'll leave it at that.
That's not good.
great question, Paul.
That was a great question.
Really good question. 2 killer questions. All right. So, Garrett Goodwin, you're next, buddy. You better follow up with a strong one and everybody else, because if not, this is going downhill fast. This podcast is on the weight of your guys' shoulders. Like I did that. Garrett Goodwin writes, I wasn't sure how the dog tracking deal worked until I had to call one out for the buck last fall, but I am sure a believer in them. I'm curious, though, of the different ways to train them for tracking procedures.
in a nutshell, you know, I could probably talk for 3 or 4 hours about how to start a dog, but in a nutshell, what you're trying to do to a young dog is teach them to go from A to B. And you do that by starting off with a lot of scent. A lot of times guys will drag they'll go to the store and get a liver or use a deer liver on a rope, and they'll drag it 25, 30 yards and they'll start their dog on it like 20 minutes later. And sometimes, you know, with depending on the dog, you have to encourage the dog down the track, but you're eventually trying to get them to the end and B, and make B really, 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 really cool.
Right.
Like, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. So what you're trying to do is teach them that, you know, if I do this work, I get the reward, and the reward is really cool.
Yeah.
Right.
Dad's really happy with me. I get a piece of liver and I get to ride in the back of the truck and, you know, whatever it is that turns your dog on. Right. So after that, your job is to introduce blood and hoof scent to that dog once they've got the A to B down. Mm-hmm. And once you introduce blood and hoof scent, your job is to actually reduce the amount of scent over time until your dog can actually track nothing but hoof scent. No blood.
Interesting.
You know, if the theory is if the hunter has blood, he doesn't necessarily need the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we're going to be called in when there's no blood. Mm-hmm. Blood ran out. Let's call a dog. So you have to get your dog tracking that interdigital scent or that, you know, in that hoof scent. So in a nutshell, that's how you train a dog. Now there's 1,000 different nuances in between,
right.
You know, what I said at first, what I ended with. Right. And it takes years.
Hey, you can always come back. When
And really, it takes years to develop a veteran dog. It takes a lot of work.
Wow. Interesting, man.
If you think you're going to train a dog in a summer, you're going to lay 6, 8, 10 practice lines and then just hang it up and say, I got a tracking dog right now. No, you don't.
I love that. I love that, honestly.
You don't. You really don't have. I mean, you might have a dog that started that knows, but that dog needs a better foundation. It needs more and more and more exposure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It needs to be pounded with exposure.
That makes sense.
Wow, that's so cool.
They learn themselves. Really, we only can teach them so much. They learn the rest on their own,
right.
Doing the real deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from experience and doing it and being out there and working. Just yep. How we learn anything. Veteran or whatever we're doing.
Yep. I wonder if they can tell, like, this blood belongs to this track.
Yes.
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 Yes, they can, Eric.
Yeah.
That would be cool if you could talk to him for a day. Like,
this will blow your mind. Think about this. Let's say you know, in most of the Midwest, this can't happen, but let's say you've got a feeder in Texas and there's 50 deer around this feeder and a deer gets shot around that feeder and there's no blood. That dog walks in and walks right to the track and started that track where that deer was shot and follows that deer out of that feeder. Yeah, how does it do that?
Smells that track.
I don't know.
Pretty crazy.
How does a wolf pick out the sickliest or the weakest elk in the herd? And they'll laser focus on them. They'll peel them out from the herd and then they'll eat them.
They're giving something off that's there.
Ooh, I'm going to get a wolf.
What's that?
I'm going to get a wolf.
Yeah, good luck. Have you ever seen one of them, like, in the wild?
No.
They're freaking huge.
I never have either. I know they're big, but is there any guys that have, like, wolf mixes that do blood tracking?
No.
I think that'd be too wild.
There's been talk about training a coyote, but a really good point about coyote. Coyotes aren't used to tracking 24-hour lines. They're used to getting on a deer right away.
Because they're hungry.
That's there for them.
Yeah. I just, you know, I don't know.
I feel like
I don't know. Yeah.
You want to go nuts on something, don't you?
I don't want a coyote in my house. I can't barely have... You know.
How feral, man. They got to be so fucking feral. All right, moving on. Taylor Whitman, shout out to you. Big supporter. So we kind of covered this. How hard is it to train a dog for deer tracking? A scale 1 to 10, how hard is it? If you got it just for a nutshell.
It's not rocket science, but it takes effort.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it. It's how much effort in how much time you want to dedicate to it.
So it's scalable per person, per dog, pretty much. Like, what are you willing to put in?
Pretty much.
Cool.
You know, I would say 6 or 7 out of 10, most people can have the ability to train a dog. It's whether they want to.
Right.
And the second half to her question is, how does the scent differ from a normal deer going about its own business and a wounded deer for the dog track?
Awesome question. We just touched on it. A trained tracking dog, a veteran dog, a finished dog, shouldn't have too much problem differentiating between a deer that he thinks he's going to catch up to and one that he's not. You know, it's sort of a I guess it's a saying, I guess, among some of us, is that my dog was telling me the deer was dead. Well, he didn't turn around and say, this deer is dead.
Yes.
He's doing it by, he's communicating to me by his body language. He's telling me that we're going to find this deer. He's very focused. He's not marking. He's always nose down. He doesn't care what I'm, you know.
He's into it.
He is into it 100.
Laser focused, like you said.
10%.
In the zone.
And we're probably going to find this deer. Now, if he's lollygagging and if he's looking up this way and he marks in this tree, I can almost turn around to the hunter and say he doesn't like it.
Mm.
But I can't do that because, like we were talking about before, it's a hard sell to begin with. And if I turn around and say, my dog's telling me your deer's not dead, it's like, oh, how do I sell that?
Right. Yeah, right away. Right. So this guy's an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that, though. It makes, because if you don't know, you don't know.
It's true.
But that's why we're doing this podcast too, a little bit. You know, it's like an education. I mean, I'm learning a shit ton.
Oh, for sure.
One of the coolest things for a new team to discover is when their dog finally gets it and they see that on the track themselves. They're like, holy cow, man, she was really focused and she never lifted her head. And all of a sudden there was a deer. And I'm like, your dog just told you what she looks like.
Yeah. You kind of clicked with your dog and that's interesting.
Yep.
Very cool.
It's 100% real. I mean, hunters think we're full of shit when we say it. It's not. I get that though.
It makes perfect sense from what you said. Man, you know, you're like perking my interest pretty hard, man. Like I can see like if I ever get burnt, like kind of what you were saying, like I can see this being like the next almost level of like being involved with deer hunting, but you're involved in the fun of the recovery, which is mostly the funnest part at certain points.
You know, there was like how you are when you find a deer, right? I walked up on 47 deer last year.
That's cool.
Guys high-fiving, hugging. I mean, everything that we do around it, you know.
Have you ever had a hunter kiss you?
Yeah.
I figured so.
How big was the deer?
Not very big.
Oh, okay.
Not big enough to get smooched on, apparently.
There was, I've been kissed and hugged and thrown up on and...
Thrown up on?
Gee whiz.
Yeah.
Going out with Doug? Find deer or what?
No, Doug falls asleep in the middle of the track.
Yeah, Doug
the track.
Falls asleep on him.
Wake me up when you find him.
He has narcolepsy, so we're dealing with that.
But,
interesting.
It's a process.
Kissed and thrown up on.
Being able to do what we do and walk up on deer that we get to walk up on, and see guys' reactions and how grateful they are. And that's
a lot of emotion.
That's what it's about.
And honestly, that's one of the best things about like your buddy calling you, like, hey, you want to go on a deer track? Like, yeah, because I don't know how many times you find a deer by yourself and you're like, there ain't no one back there.
Yeah, air high-fiving. Yeah.
Right.
But I will say,
share that moment with, though.
Be careful with buddies on your track. And I've got a sort of a saying that, and it holds true every single year, buddies in blood will cost you your deer.
Mm.
Buddies will convince you to go too early. You know you shouldn't go in there, and a buddy's going to come over with a case of beer and go, let's drink a couple beers, let's go, you want to go? And you know you're not supposed to go.
But you do anyway.
Well, let's just go see what the blood looks like. You're done. Because once you get there, and you're going to stop, and you're going to peel off blood and come back, you're going. And all of a sudden, I think we just jumped him.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. So be careful with the buddies thing.
Yeah, no, that's smart. Very smart.
Yeah.
Thanks Taylor for the question. Hunter Hook, best breed for tracking. Can you train a German Shepherd to do it?
You definitely can train a German Shepherd to do it. Best dog. There is none.
Yeah. We kind of covered that, but that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is none.
Cool. Thanks Hunter. Bob Miller. Is it true dogs can track without a blood trail? I've read dogs can track from the scent pheromone left from the interdigital gland when that particular deer is hit, wounded, and can differentiate that part from the rest. True or false?
Good thing Doug wasn't reading that one.
1,000% true.
1,000% true.
Yep.
Thanks, Bob. We kind of covered that already.
Yeah.
Blood tracking is definitely a misnomer. It should be deer tracking. It's not blood tracking. We don't need blood to track.
See? Okay. I like that. Ben Bailey. I'm just reading them, so this is what happens when we don't vet them, but I want to be honest and let people know that.
Yep.
Because I just don't want people to think we're not answering a question.
Sure.
If it's like uncomfortable, doesn't fit this like false agenda people there might think there might be.
Yep.
I've heard that when it rains, the dogs actually smell better. Yet when people check trail cameras during the rain, it washes away your scent. Which is it? Easy. So we've covered that.
Yep.
But thank you, Ben, for your question.
Thanks, Ben.
So the other questions I couldn't get pulled up on the computer, And I don't know why that is. So if I have to repeat the questions.
Instagram on desktop is weird.
It's very, actually, you know what? I wonder. Let me see if I can AirPlay. Oh, I can.
Uh-oh. Technology. Oh.
So. See y'all. This works. Might be tough to read. Let me see if I can do.
Can you click on them?
Trying to get. Okay, this will work, right? Yeah. It's better than nothing. Can you read that?
Yeah.
Gary, okay. Or is it tough? Yeah.
No, I'm good.
Let's start. What was the first question?
The question about price is pretty interesting.
Let's start at bottom right, because I think those came in first. Okay. And then we'll work our way up. Is that cool, guys?
Yeah. Sure.
Hey, guys, interrupting this podcast. Listen, we're only going to interrupt it once. There's only two commercial breaks in this whole show, but I think you want to listen to this.
I'm just saying there's some people in here. And people got to go to the bathroom.
We got a veteran shout out on the way. And my cameras are going nuts right now coming into this cold front. I'm sorry. Distraction. But big announcement. Big working class bow hunter announcement.
Huge.
New partnership announcement. We figured we'd do this into the mid-roll. Yep. I know some people skipped the intro.
Make sure you're listening.
We have changed some things up with Working Class Bow Hunter. We're very proud of this move. We're going to explain some things with this transition. It's a transition.
Yeah.
Yes.
We have partnered with Dialed Archery. Check them out, dialedarchery.com. It is bow sights, kick-ass bow sights, American-made bow sights. And that comes as probably a shocker to some people because we've been partnered with HHA for a really long time. We're very proud of what we've done with HHA. We're very proud of that partnership. Mm-hmm. Still think HHA is a kick-ass company.
Make great products.
Someone asks, hey, what do you think of HHA? Go buy one.
Yeah,
like 100%. For sure. Shot them for years. Love them. Love their drop-away arrest. They support our veterans. They're an American company. Nothing but positive things to say. So to clear any rumors, just because a production like us switches from one brand to another, that does not mean that there's turmoil. There's none at all. They're great people. Very proud of what we're able to do with that company. Moving forward, you know, it's we just had an opportunity to explore a partnership with Dialed and moving forward. And our good buddy Scott Bakken is one of the owners and operators at Dialed Archery. Great. And just getting in conversation, we had some ideas of things we both want for our brands colliding and things we could do together in the future and opportunities that will arise and similar mindsets and similar work ethic and motivation and stuff like that. And we're like, man, let's do something. This makes sense. Yep. And I think it would be cohesive and let's go for it. Yep. So we're shooting the new Dialed Arxos. Been loving it. I had it on my elk hunt being banged against trees and everything on the side of a horse. And, It held up great, and looking forward to getting after it this whitetail season with the new Dialed sights.
Yep, I just got mine a couple of days ago, so I'm looking forward to getting it all on my bow and set up.
Yeah.
Just got mine sighted in, and it's ready to go.
Clint's been shooting one for several months now, and we're ready to get after it. Check them out at Dialed Archery. We're going to work on getting a promo code, and there's some things coming in the future that we're really excited about.
Mm-hmm. Probably the best-looking bow sight you could get
ever.
I think it's slicker than.
They have dovetail sights. They have Picatinny versions. You can customize colors. You can do sight tapes on the inside or the outside. I chose mine to go on the inside.
That is as well.
Which I'll be honest, at first practicing, I was like, I wish I would have done the outside. But in a hunting situation, when you're like set up on an elk setup and you think you have an elk coming in, you're always looking at the inside of your bow before you draw, not the outside of your bow.
Yep.
So then that's like where the big benefit was. So check them out at dialedarchery.com. We're very excited about this partnership and what's going to happen with it.
Awesome.
So hopefully you guys check them out. And we're excited to bring you guys some more updates and talk about this more here in the future. So that's the big announcement. And moving on, you know, podcast brought to you by Scent Crusher. We're rocking. We got a Scent Crusher closet coming for the studio. So when people come from out of town, they can crush their clothes. And we got the Ozone Go, of course, the room clean, of course.
Everything's rocking these days.
Cleaning out the smells.
That's right.
It's hunting time. You got to clean yourself up.
No more smells.
Yeah, quit being so stinky.
Podcast also brought to you by Trophy Line. Trophy Line is probably primarily known for their saddles.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I believe it's more of just a fucking hunting company now, yeah. Man.
They got a little bit of everything now.
They got like headlamps, dry bags, all sorts of shit, dude. It's just crazy. Bow slings, everything.
Bow cases.
Bow cases. So I don't think they have bow cases. That's Redline. Shout out to Redline, too. They have badass quivers, yep, and stabilizers, too, which they sent us some. So it's very nice of them. But our good buddy John Adams just took a full-time gig as the new, like,
marketing director.
What do they call him?
Marketing director.
Is it media director or marketing director?
I think it's marketing.
He didn't take Weston's job.
Media.
We'll go media. But so that's cool. Like, we're even more tied in with Trophy Line there. Really stoked about that partnership. Use code WCB at Everything Trophy Line if you're wanting to get into one of the new Fanatic saddle setups or a platform or some sticks or whatever you're into. And the podcast also brought to you by Camofire. Doug, what do we say about Camofire?
You got to delete that browser history.
Delete that browser history.
Don't get yourself in trouble, especially now during hunting season.
Those guys will be...
Don't lose your days of hunting just because you left your browser up.
Kendall and Marcus are coming into the studio overlapping the first and second week of November. They'll be here for a week.
Hell yeah.
They're going to be hunting the ever-elusive whitetail.
Son of a bitch.
So that'd be cool. Be cool to have them boys in studio. Yeah. I'm excited for that. Check them out. Doug, you got a veteran shout out?
I do. Let me pull one up here. So this is submitted by Dakota Harmada. And the veteran is Jesse. Oh boy, he didn't help me, but I'm going to try my best. La Helen. He's in the Marine Corps. I'm going to keep moving on. Jesse and I have met probably about 2, maybe 3 years ago from mutual friends. As he did my Euro mount on my first deer for me and a few beers deep, we hit it off. Jesse is a bad motherfucker as he was a 6.21 radio operator and a 9.33 marksman instructor in the United States Marine Corps. Dude got me into the WC podcast, was the first one introduced me to. Jesse is an awesome person that I look up to. I think he's been a true hero. And he is an awesome father of two. Dude just killed the biggest buck of his this year, 2021. Sorry, I'm late on this one.
Damn, you're delayed on this?
No, he actually messaged me for this one, so.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I missed it. On his first sit on public. Dick. Yes, very much.
Love it.
Put in that work, bud, and keeps slating those Hawaii deers. Oh, he's in Hawaii. Oh, by the way, nice saddle. Flamer.
Love to see it.
I also like Tia says hunting archery experience. She goes, I don't know, he has it.
He has it. That's
thanks for
great.
Submitting that, Dakota, and thank you for your service, Jesse.
Yeah, cheers.
Thanks, Jesse, for your service. Thanks, cheers, buddy. Jesse. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for letting us interrupt and listen to our bullshit. Yeah.
Sorry, Dakota. I told him I'd get to that one right away. So
okay, well, we're there. We're there. All right, back to the episode. Sorry for the interruptions. Enjoy the rest. And I'm going to try my best to read Instagram names. They're all smashed together and weird and underscores and all that. James Struble, how many yards to wait before the call? What shot placement do you need to call instantly?
How many yards to wait before the call? In other words, how long you think you should track before you call a tracker?
Mm-hmm.
That's two-part questions. Is there a shot placement do you need to call instantly? There's some thought in the tracking community that if you get on a shoulder shot deer right away, you can actually run that deer enough that it's going to run itself down.
Really?
I'm not sure that I'm a proponent of that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not 51 years old. I'm not going to run a deer through the woods. You know, we will track a deer that we have jumped, but I'm not going to chase one. Off lead guys, shoulder shots, the deer's going to be found, going to be baited, and probably going to be put down.
Oh, really? Oftentimes they do.
Yeah. I mean, shoulder shot deer, if you can get on them right away with two or three dogs, the deer's in serious
trouble.
Okay.
Can we break something down too while we're on the shoulder hit thing? Got some conversations at elk camp. I believe deer and deer hunting kind of did something about like the, have you seen that video, The Myth of No Man's Land?
Yep.
And maybe I'm thinking about it wrong, and I think I'm thinking about it right. And this is a perfect time, I think, perfect episode to break this down. So when deer, I think it was deer and deer hunting. I might be mistaken. You know what video I'm talking about?
Where they had
the model, biological model.
The 3D model. Yeah.
And the guy's like, there is no man's land. And he grabs the deer's shoulder and he removes it. If you look, the lungs go all the way up to the spine. Well, I'm like, the no man's land is the shoulder. Like, I think people think a misconception that the shoulder blade is down where the leg bone is. And it's up high. Yeah. It what is no man's land is what I've always said. When you hit high, you're hitting that shoulder blade, right?
Okay. I think when I hear no man's land, I think of straps.
Okay.
Back straps.
And it's close.
Above the spine.
Oh, above the spine. And that's a nick. That's what I call a nick.
That's a nick. I think a lot of people think that the spine of the deer is actually on top of the deer. It's not. It's well
yeah,
below.
It sits down.
You've got all that strap sitting in there, right? And as the spine comes forward into the deer, it drops way down. And that's the, mm-hmm. the spine, when it drops way down, that's the part that the scapula covers.
Yeah.
Well, to me, no man's land meant above the spine. But there's also, people think there's no man's land under the spine.
And that's the scapula.
And over the lungs, which there is no pleural space.
Yeah.
In other words, the lungs take up the entire chest cavity. There was just a recent video.
Where
was blowing into that trachea and blowing up them lungs. Well, the lungs actually will envelop themselves above the spine a little bit. They'll bulge above the spine a little bit. But I think there's a lot of controversy on what no man's land actually is.
I've always looked at it as you hit that shoulder scapula, and you just don't get the penetration. Your arrow hits it and bang, right into that shoulder, and you get a lot of blood for a little bit, and then it dries up, and a lot of times the deer lives.
Just like my kudu.
Yes.
That's what I agree with, too. That's what I always thought.
That's what I always thought.
No man's land was.
So when someone's like, there is a no man's land, I'm like, well, I get, if you remove the bones, there's technically not a no man's land.
Yeah.
I think backstrap is a nick. You hit meat and skin and hair. Yep. I think that you, from a tree stand angle or whatever angle, when a deer reacts and you, oh, I hit them high in no man's land, you weren't aiming there, but a deer reaction might cause you to aim there, a duck, and you hit that scapula, and that's when your arrow goes, and then you get no penetration, then it falls out, and you get good blood for a little bit, and then it dries up.
Yep.
Deer's either one lunged or not lunged at all.
Right.
That's my perspective on what a no man's land hit is.
Yeah. Well, that's a new one. And it's curious that you guys have that same, because I haven't heard that reiteration of no man's land.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing to.
Scapula hits, do you recover a lot of them?
No. It's tough to get through a deer scapula.
Yeah.
To get enough penetration to get into both lungs.
Well, I might be wrong in what I'm considering no man's land, and that's.
I don't think there's right or wrong.
No.
But I think people think, oh, I hit shoulder, tuck it against that shoulder. And that's a say, we've say that, but you're tucking it against the leg bone.
The leg, right.
When you're going for a heart shot, and the crease is the leg bone.
Right.
So
I'm a huge proponent of getting away from bone.
Long.
Yeah.
Huge proponent of getting away from bone. The purposeful heart shots are unnecessary risk in my. Again, I'm speaking from a tracking perspective. If you kill deer, you know, if you kill deer with heart shots all the time, knock yourself out. I'm not here to say one way or the other, but I'd rather hit the center of the lungs. I'd like to be behind the leg a couple inches, right in the middle of the body. I get the greatest margin of error in all directions, and my deer's, you know, if I double lung the deer, he's going to fall over in 100 yards anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Versus 60. Oh, you got to go another 40 yards. Okay. But then we've seen hard shot deer go 500.
That's right. Crazy.
That's so wild.
Well, yeah. James, that's a good question. Mike Irwin, I think it's good, but people have lost a part of tracking and rely on others to recover the animal. I think that's more of just a comment.
I think from my perspective, I think hunters could do a better job of knowing anatomy and knowing basic, detective skills.
Mm-hmm.
Does the reaction of the deer match the blood that I have in the arrow? Do I think it's a long hit and all of a sudden I've got dark red blood? Where'd that dark red blood come from?
Right.
I think hunters could do a better job for themselves by recognizing what they see and what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, you know, are we losing tracking skills by using a dog? If you use one all the time, I guess, but if you need a tracking dog all the time, you've got other issues.
right.
Call the dog.
Right. Very true.
But I do track for colorblind guys too. Particularly two of them. One is 70 years old. He's colorblind, and he wants, you know, he calls me in every deer he shoots.
Just
okay,
in case.
That's cool. He's 5 minutes from the house, and it's all good.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, what are you going to do? Let a deer sit in the woods? You know, like we find a lot of deer 1,400 yards, and we found four drops of blood. You're going to tell me you're going to track that deer?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You're not going to.
No, there's no way.
You're not.
You're not going to do every zig and zag it makes. And,
100%.
And you know what I wonder, too, is like, you know, we're big advocates for DeerCast, and DeerCast has that that tool in it called DeerCast Track, and I think that's very valuable.
Yes.
If you can see where your arrow hit, and then a lot of the information with Tracker John and some of the other trackers on there, and we got to get you hooked up with them guys for some future tracks and stuff. I'm sure they'd be definitely open-minded to it. But, you know, I wonder, like, that's probably going to make a big call as, like, call the tracker or not from the rip. A lot of guys that have DeerCast are looking at DeerCast Track before they even get down.
Yep.
You know I do, just to make sure.
When in doubt, call me.
Yeah, there
we
you
can,
go.
We can even talk through it on the phone, talk through the scenario and say, I might tell you, go ahead and go in the morning. If you go more than 150 yards, turn around and call me.
Yeah. Mark where you stopped. And
or if you run out of blood. You know, that's the biggest thing. If guys run out of blood, just... you're going to look around because you don't know whether you're going to run out of blood until you look and can't find anymore, right?
Right.
Don't, like, branch out and grid search and don't call your buddies in and don't cover this ridge and don't walk down the creek. Just if you run out of blood, just get out of the woods and call me.
Have you had it happen ever where they can't find the deer and, like, your dog comes and finds it, like, 40 yards?
All the time. Every day.
Talking that doe I shot last year. There's no blood. I could have swore I smoked her, and we just couldn't find...
any blood.
Anything. And then, like, we were finally heading out, and it was, what, 60 yards from the stand?
Yeah.
It's just like...
well, that that big deer on my Facebook page, that's what happened to those guys. They tracked the deer for, like, literally all night long, all morning, and I finally told them on the phone, guys, get the hell out of there. Stop. I don't care if you have to go to the bar until I get there.
I'll just, pick you up.
He goes, well, we're at the fence. We ran out of blood anyway. I said, cool. Just please stay out of there. Please.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to beg with these guys, right?
Yeah.
And then I get
people
there.
People are excited and everything, you know.
Diesel goes 120 yards in about 90 seconds, and hey, I got your deer. I'm like, no way.
Oh, man.
9 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a framed picture of Diesel in that trophy room right now. Oh, yeah. Just like, this is our...
That deer was a monster, too.
Yeah, it looked like a stud.
Yeah.
This guy, Chessmore 13. What are the percentages of finding a wounded deer? Gut shot, muscle hit, high, low, et cetera?
Gut shot's big, they're going to die. Muscle hits, they're not going to. I'd rather hit a deer low than high, I think. Gut and liver hits, I mean, the deer's going to die. It's just a matter of, is it where we can find it?
Yeah. That's good to know. That's a confidence builder, I think, for a lot of people.
Put it this way. If you talked with a tracker and you have a legitimate liver or gut or intestine hit deer, we're going to your track pretty excited.
We're probably
going to get some pictures taken, right?
Very good to hear. I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot.
But at the same time, it's not a guarantee either because there's liver and gut hit deer that we do not find.
Mm-hmm.
Either they're not dead, they went someplace where we can't go, bottom of the lake, cross the river, onto the neighbors, who knows. And then there's the fact that dogs can have bad days. And I can have bad days and pull them off. And I'm the idiot that screwed it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but liver and gut hits are, and intestine hits, they're going to kill the deer.
Yeah.
Period. It's a matter of when and where.
And like being in Illinois too, do you run into a lot of it where like you can't go on the neighbor's property?
100%.
Do you?
Yeah.
So in Iowa, can you take your dog on the neighbor's property?
I don't believe so, but I don't know. Don't take my word for that one.
Because as long as you have a weapon with you.
The hunter can go.
I would imagine the dog and the tracker can go then too, but that's check your local laws for before you do anything stupid.
Yeah, that's fair.
But no, in Illinois, I can't go where you can't go.
That's very fair. Yeah, that makes sense. This is kind of a different one. Basically, Matt Shaw, 94. What tick prevention or other disease prevention for tracking dogs?
That's a good question.
Well, I use a product called Vector 3D. It's a topical... and it's fleas, ticks, mosquitoes, flies, all that stuff. It's pretty good stuff. But there's some neurological issues with all that flea and tick stuff. And I notice when, you know, cause in the wintertime, I don't put it on him.
Right.
But when I do put it on him, I notice a change in him.
Really?
Yeah. And I try not to, I know it's bad. And if there's any vets like listening or whatever, but I try not to do it all the time, to be honest with you, and I take a chance on doing it. But, you know, it's like tick vaccine, and you know, we do the best we can. But
is that like the gel stuff you put in their hair?
Yeah.
See, we never had luck with that with any of our dogs.
And really?
We had they have like a little chewable one.
Oh.
Worked awesome.
You know, the Bavarian Mountain Hounds, they're prone to seizures, and there's been a couple dogs die from tick medication, fleeing tick meds. So all of us in the community are like scared to death to...
Yeah.
You know, it's...
But if your dog gets a tick, are you going to comb through all his hair every time? Is it got to be hard?
He's got some pretty short hair, but we find ticks on him. Not regularly, but once in a while we do find a tick on him. And
yeah. That's par for the course with what they're doing.
Right.
So this is a good question. There's two... Actually, Dominic asked the same question twice here. Well, not twice, but are you... What's a fair price that a tracker would ask, and then are you expected to tip? If so, how much?
Well, here's another big misnomer. There are teams that charge a flat fee. There are teams that charge a flat fee and a recovery fee, and there are teams that take tips, and then there's teams that refuse everything. It's all personal preference, and I can guarantee you 100% take it to the bank. What a team charges does not dictate whether they're good or bad. If I know a team that takes zero money whatsoever, that has one, and he's been tracking for 40 years, Al Sherman in Indiana, he refuses to take a dime, and you can't call in a better team.
He just loves doing it.
He just loves doing it, and he's got the means to do it. So it's like, you know, he refuses anything, but if you got a jar of honey or some cookies, yeah, he'll take that. Yeah,
a little barter.
But then, you know, when we've got other teams in the state that charge $300 and they're absolutely 100% worth every single penny.
I think a lot of guys would pay $300 to find their deer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
I would
for the most part, but it leads into, you know, I take tips. I don't charge a fee. I never have. I don't anticipate I ever will. But I don't want somebody not calling me because they can't afford me.
Yeah.
I would rather find their deer, right? I mean, you know, if a family is struggling and the 16-year-old boy goes out and shoots a doe he can't find, and the mother's on the phone telling me I can't, you know, the last guy wanted $150, I'm coming out to track your deer. We're going to find it.
That's awesome. Very cool, man.
That is awesome. Right?
So,
yeah, shout out to you for that.
You know, so, but the big takeaway for hunters there is just because a team charges does not mean they're better.
Right.
There are teams that charge a lot of money that couldn't find a bacon sandwich in a phone booth. It's the honest truth.
Yeah, I'm gonna start using that. Yeah, that's great.
That's a very Eric saying.
That's good.
And there's teams that accept tips that are just absolutely lights out. And it's the other way around too. There's teams that charge a lot of money. They're absolutely worth it. You have to know your tracker.
Yeah. Well, this is why we're doing this podcast. The guys are, you know, a lot of guys and gals can learn from this. So Keaton asked, what's the percentage of finding the deer if people have been on the trail first and failed?
Depends on what you've done. It definitely muddies up the waters because what happens is all the scent that's coming off of that deer, when you walk down that trail and track that deer, it's on the bottom of your boots. Everywhere you walk, that deer walks. If you're tracking a deer, I'll always tell hunters to stay off that blood trail. Walk to the side. You don't have to be on top of it to see it. Just walk to the side and pay attention to where you're going. Think of an open field that's covered with snow. It's a huge field, 40-acre field, right? And there's one set of tracks going across that field. That's what an undisturbed scent trail looks like to a dog. Now take a rugby team and practice on there for an hour. There's tracks everywhere. That's what a grid search or a tracked up deer or scent trail looks like to a tracking dog.
Damn, that's a good analogy.
Everywhere. I mean, you can see all the footsteps. They smell, we see. Look at what they have to wade through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How bad do you want your deer? Stay out of the woods and just call us. Wow. I'm not saying don't track your deer, but what we're saying is be smart about it.
Visualize the smell almost.
Yep.
And that's what I've always like practiced that too, to walk off to the side, because you never know if you have to go back and find blood.
Yeah. Dude, I'm bad at that. I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't want to say I'm bad at it. Like, when I track deer, I'm on the trail, but I'm going super slow. Like, I'm not progressing until I find blood. So I'm good at that point. But I noticed in Africa, Stewart walks to the side of the trail, and I'm like, oh, shit. I need to, like, I just took note of it.
I don't know why, but I've always just walked off to the side.
Smart. Yeah. It's very smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm wanting to be, if I'm finding blood for me, I'm on top of it looking.
Right.
So.
In case it turns bad, preserve all the evidence that's there and give the dog a fighting chance.
Very smart.
I tell people that diesel is your best first option and a very poor last resort. If you're calling me after a day and a half and your buddies have been all over the place, I'm not going to tell you that we're going to find that deer. Mm-hmm. You've made it exponentially harder.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, if you run out of blood and you track your deer, run out of blood, be smart, mark last blood, mind how you get out of there, and be honest with me about what you did. I really like the odds of finding a deer if it's dead if you do that rather than, oh, let's just go up here down to the creek or let's just go over this holler. And
a lot of guys lie to you.
Yeah, probably hard to get a lot of honest. They don't want to admit failure.
Yep. Okay, so here's the big thing. And the trackers wrestle with this all the time, is we beg people, just be honest with us. We're here to help you. We're here to find your deer. We want to find your deer almost as bad as you do. Trust me, I want to find your deer almost as bad as you do. But when you're not honest with us about, like, when was the deer shot, what you did after the track, what the deer did, I think there's some misconception of, you know, if you mention a liver and gut hit to a tracker, they're going to salivate and they're going to be here. Even though I know I stuck the deer in the shoulder, I just want them to come out.
Oh, that's what you're saying.
Right. And I think some hunters are getting savvy to talking with trackers and what the trigger words are. You know, if they say shoulder hit, they're going to get turned down by some trackers.
Right.
But if they say, oh, I think I hit liver, guess who's coming?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. And I'm not, everybody wants to find their deer and they want to find it right now. By being honest with the tracker, not just me, you're giving yourself the best odds of finding your deer. And that's the end goal.
Right.
If you call me, Kurt, if you call me and say, hey, I know we screwed this up, but I know this deer was dead and I thought he was just over the hill and all of a sudden we're 900 yards into this and I got three guys with me. I'm sorry, what do we do? I know what I'm walking into.
Right. You're not blindsided when you get there.
I can look at Eric and go, did you walk over here? Yeah, that's me. I pull the dog off and we go the other way. Instead of letting my dog bust his butt for 900 yards with nobody telling me behind me, that's where Jim walked.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So here's the other part of that, is that once your dog gets enough experience and you can read your dog, you get after last blood and your dog's going east, west, north, southwest, coming back. I know what happened.
Yeah, you can read it.
I know what happened. You grid searched and you didn't tell me.
Yep.
So it's real simple. I just type in Kurt's number on my phone and go, liar.
Kurt, liar. It's just like telling your doctor that you don't eat fast food and you walk in with man tits and he's like, come on, bitch. I know you ate a Big Mac yesterday.
So when you call, and I know you were probably dishonest with me, and a lot of buddies will rat them, their other buddies out. Oh yeah, Jim was walking over here, and you can almost see it on their face. Go, oh shit, I said that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm not going to come, but if I've got a choice between that and somebody that was honest with me, I'm going to the honest person's trash.
Sure. It's worth your time.
Yeah.
And it's being respectful, really. But a lot of guys, you know, like, it's a pride thing, kind of what you mentioned, Eric, you know, don't want to admit their failure and they don't want to, like, it's just.
So here's the other thing, too, though, with that. Hunters that aren't honest, like, for an example, about when they shot the deer, because all of a sudden they can sit for like 3 years to kill this deer. They can hunt for hours and hours and hours to get an arrow into the deer. And once they arrow the deer, it's like all their patience and all their. Either common sense just went out the window and now they got to go get it. Right. I had a hunter last year blatantly lie to me about when he shot this deer. Said he shot it in the morning. So we set up a track at night. So he didn't call me until like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Say, I shot the deer this morning. I looked a little bit, whatever. So make a long story short, I bring my dog into this track at night. This deer was shot 3 hours ago. I'm not tracking this deer 3 hours ago. That was shot 3 hours ago in the guts because he's probably not dead and we're doing this at night. Now you just put my dog in jeopardy and me in jeopardy.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so when it comes to, you know, situations like that, it's just be honest with your tracker. We're going to do a much better job if we know what you did and didn't do.
You're not here to judge.
Yeah. No, that's just it. And as far as me,
you're here to make your job easier.
I'm coming anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Bottom line, shit happens sometimes. Yeah.
Yes.
And you don't think clearly when you got a 160-inch buck in your face. You know, you make weird decisions sometimes, and that's okay.
Yep.
It's not okay all the time. Shit happens.
We're human.
Yeah, just tell us.
Yeah. We can fuck up.
So if I got shot like a buck like at 4 p.m. and I call you that night, you're probably like, I'll be in the morning.
See you in the morning.
Yeah.
Yep. For sure.
That's
not
fair.
Not 3 hours.
Look how much ease you had. The big dog's coming in the morning. Doug's going
to
sleep.
Well, and that's going to make people sleep a lot better because, you know,
for sure.
Now you have someone else's opinion. You're not sitting there pacing back and forth in the kitchen going, fuck, do I go after it now? Yeah. Do I wait till the morning? Which I do.
You're still going to pace.
Yeah.
You're, oh, right.
Yeah. Dude, but that pacing is hard, I guess.
Yeah.
Where are we at here?
But I agree with you. Definitely. It's an ease of mind.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah, like, for sure.
At least I'm getting help.
This is not really a question. It's more of like a thumbs up. Macaulay Ruet. If a deer is wounded, the hunter has an obligation to do anything possible to recover. Pro dog, thumbs up.
Good awesome. Deal.
Duragas 81. Is the deer with dogs the same as rabbits with dogs, where the dogs will circle the deer back to the hunter?
Can't speak to that. An off-lead tracker be able to speak to that. But what we do see fairly often is a deer, what we call a J-hook. Right before they die, they will make a little hook. And we think what they're doing there is setting themselves up. They're going to put their nose in the wind. They're going to look towards their back trail if they can to watch who's coming behind them so they can watch their trail in. And then as soon as they see you walk in, they are out the back door. So we often see if we're tracking in a straight line a lot and all of a sudden we start hooking, we'll start looking for a deer because it's close.
How big on average is that hook? Are we talking a hook of 20 yards, of 100 yards, of 50 yards?
20 to 50.
20 to 50. Interesting.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't either.
That's another thing, I mean, just to look for too when you're out. If you got good blood, you know, you might find that J-hook and be like,
yep.
Is it deer that are hit back typically that have the time to think about the hook? Or because I know a lot of times if you double lung a deer, he's probably running right to his death on the trail and you don't have time to hook.
Yeah,
and
I don't know if I can answer that. I don't have enough data or experience to answer that truthfully. I don't know.
It's interesting though. And B Kraut 16, we'll kind of cover this a little bit. How do you get started training the dog for tracking? Good dogs for tracking. Lesson along the way.
Find a dog you like and work. Put in the work.
That's with anything, right?
Yep. Yeah, if you want to be successful with anything, you have to work on it. You can't have a great tracking dog by hoping you have one.
Right. A lot of great questions.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think very valid questions there. Let me see where we at here. Stop mirroring. That worked good, actually. I hope to do that more often. I think there's just so much to learn from this podcast and so much to tap into. And I think we did a pretty good job of covering a lot of it. Is there certain things we haven't covered, do you feel, that are definitely worth hitting home? I mean, we can definitely do more.
Don't lie to your tracker. I mean, gee whiz.
Yeah. Don't lie. It's like lying to your doctor. He knows.
Well, here's something else, too, to keep in mind is that, and I'll go back to it. I think I really hammer this point home is I think hunters need to be more educated about the shot, what a deer's reaction means, what the blood looks like, where is that blood typically coming from? Just because the blood's got bubbles in it does not mean it's lung blood. Just because you've got dark blood doesn't mean it's come from the liver. It's looking at the physical evidence. What did that deer do after? You know, and I think hunters could really benefit from that right there because I get, you know, I said, well, what did the deer do after it was shot? Well, I don't know. It ran off. Okay. I mean, it's a legitimate question.
Noted. Okay.
if you're not, you know, sort of conscious about what to look for. So last year, not to talk about me, but last year there was first week of November, and I'll make this short. There was a I did three tracks in the morning, bang, bang, bang. I think we went 2 for 3, diesel needed a rest. I walked in the house at 1 o'clock. My wife works from home, and I told her about the tracks, and I said, I'm shutting my phone off, and I'm going to the woods. I just want to sit in the tree stand. I want to enjoy my the afternoon. Mm-hmm. I think we had a track that's scheduled that night. And I don't hunt anymore. I seriously do not hunt anymore. And I took my bow with me and I hung it up in the tree. I literally turned my phone off. And of course I looked to my right and here he comes. And I'm like, oh geez, that deer's big. 180 inch deer.
Holy Jesus.
Cow. So he comes out of the creek. I shoot him at 20 yards and I did not see the arrow. And I typically see the arrow, but what the deer did at the end was he jumped. He ran 20, 25 yards and stood there. Motionless. I'm like, either you're going to fall over or I hit you back.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood. And I'm like, he's not falling over. And I shot that deer in the liver. I can see it. You know, I can't see the entrance and the exit, but I'm looking at his body behavior. And all of a sudden he's standing there facing away from me and he's just quartered enough where I can see his mouth open. As soon as I saw his mouth open, I said, 100%, nothing's 100%. 99% liver shot. I need to get the hell out of here now. But the problem is I'm in between... It's me, the deer, and my house. I can see the smoke coming out of my wood stove at the house. So it took me about an hour and a half to climb down and get out of there, go across the river and have my buddy pick me up somewhere else because I didn't want to bump the deer.
Right.
Well, the next morning I come back and he's not there. And I'm like, oh no, did I bump him getting out? Of course, we start diesel and 10 minutes later, he shows me the deer and he was still alive. He was bedded. He couldn't get up. Backed the dog out, put another shot at him, and it was over.
Mm-hmm.
But that liver shot deer was dead 16 hours later. But not knowing the hit, I knew what the hit was based on the deer's reaction. I didn't even look for the arrow. I didn't look at blood. I didn't look at anything. But I knew what to do because of the deer's reaction.
If you read that deer.
So I think, you know, a lot of people would, you know, track that deer that night.
Because they saw him with his, mouth open, staring there. It's like, oh, it's a dead deer.
Yep. And then, you know, if you would track that deer that night, he's in the next county.
Which most people probably would have.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure. So I think become more of a student of the game, I think you're going to recover a lot more deer.
How far did that deer run from where you shot?
150 yards.
That's all?
Short.
Because you gave him the time to lay down and not bump him. If you would have bumped him, he probably went a long way.
Long way. Most liver and gut hit deer and intestine hit deer will die in their first bed. And that first bed is generally within 300. And sometimes they'll bet even closer. If you allow them, I tell people this all the time, they know they're hurt, they know they're screwed, they know they're going to die. They want to get to a place because they're feeling bad. They want to get to the place where they feel safe and they're going to bed. If you don't disturb them, they will die there. If you disturb them, now they know they're being pursued and they will leave.
Yeah.
Kick into survival mode.
100%. I think that's what happened with that buck we couldn't find.
I think so too.
Because he definitely bedded, big pool of blood after that.
With the arrow.
With the arrow laying there in his bed.
You're talking several years ago.
Several years ago, yes.
We should have waited.
Yep. We should have waited. I got antsy, called him. Hey.
It was a while.
We waited probably, I don't know what it was. Five, 6 hours.
I got one for you.
And then laid in his bed was there, arrow was in the bed, mm-hmm. and I think we just went in too early, and then there was not a single drop of blood after that.
Yep.
It would have been nice to have your number at that point.
If you learn anything from talking with a tracker or multiple trackers, it's hunters track too early, period.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would agree.
This will pop up.
100%.
Because I do it too.
Because you have to have that deer. Right.
Drives you nuts.
You made a good point. You go after deer for 3 years, all that time in the stand, and then
instead of waiting,
you just straight after him.
Yep.
I shot this buck here on the screen. It's hard to see. I shot him when I was pretty young. I was 2000 and I had just graduated high school. There's the shot.
Well, it looks great.
That deer, this is one of those deals, and I might have bumped him on my way out young, not knowing which way he went. I shot him, was unsure of the hit because it was getting pretty dark. I backed out and went home and had anxiety all night in camp. And then we found him like several hundred yards, but bedded up. And he kind of did that thing too. He hunched. And I didn't know if I caught him low or what. But to me, I thought it was a heart shot. But
was he quartering towards you?
No, he was about broadside. But I thought I hit him low. But it ended up being good. It was just one of those unexplainable ones. But we ended up finding him because I gave him overnight. We didn't pursue it. But I think, thinking back now, I might have walked by him bedded and not known it.
Mm-hmm.
And then bumped him. Yep. And then I probably found him in a second bed, which was like another 100-200 yards from where his first bed was. When a deer gets bumped, I don't know if you know or can speak to it or if it's patternable. If a deer gets bumped in his first bed within 100 yards, do you know like typically how far they'll go before they bed again?
Or it all depends on the deer itself, on how bad he or she is hit, whether a buck is in the rut or not. That buck on October 1st is not the same buck as he is on November 15th.
Right.
The November 15th buck is full of testosterone, adrenaline, and what could have killed him in 8 hours, he's still alive and chasing does 15 later just because he's jacked up and he's ready to rock. And he's
almost zombied a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So it really all depends. I mean, I've seen him thousands of yards, miles. If they think they're being pursued, they're going to get safe. But here's the other thing is I try to always ask my hunters, is this a home range buck? Have you seen this buck before? And I asked your buddy that. And I want to know, home range bucks tend to stay where they feel comfortable. If it's a visitor, if you haven't seen this buck on camera before, most oftentimes if they're headed out, they're headed back home. And oftentimes home is not on your dirt.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good sense. Yeah. Interesting, man. Lot to take in on this episode. I really enjoyed this one a ton.
Yeah. I think we could do 30 more just like this and learn more shit.
A lot of unknowns.
I got a question.
Sure.
How do you break the bad news?
Yeah. It's a tough.
Hey,
it's gotta be like breaking up with your girlfriend. You know what I'm saying?
So one of the things that I try to do with the truck, and you might, you know, remember this, but one of the things I try to do with the truck when I'm getting ready, but even before I get the dog out, is what I want to do is sort of set expectation up front. Number one, don't expect Diesel to walk right to your deer. It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
Number two is that this might be a 3 or 4 hour effort. We might have to grind this out. Just because a dog is here does not mean that
we're going
to
find,
you know, we're going to walk right to your deer in 5 minutes. That's not how this works. And then one of the things that I'll go through is, you know, Diesel knows, you know, he's going to give me clues on whether he thinks this deer is dead or not. And I'll look at the clues along the way. And you and I are probably going to get at the same conclusions at some point in time. We're probably going to have a chat in the woods about what we think we should do. Do I think Diesel's doing a great job? Do I think he's tracking? Is he having a bad day? I'm looking at the sign involved, how many beds we have, what the beds look like. So at the end of the day, I can tell, like, if I track for you, I'm going to tell you, hey, here's what Diesel looks like when we find deer. Here's what he looks like when we don't. So what I'm really doing is sort of trying to prime the pump a little bit. So yeah. The hunter looks at the dog and says, oh, he's marking on that track. And he was looking up there. I don't think he looks too interested. Well, that's when he said we probably won't find the deer. I'm thinking the same thing. I'm just not turning around yet.
Yeah, right.
For sure. But that conversation is rough. Try it on a 6 or 7 year old girl. You have to turn around and tell dad, hey, I don't think this is going to happen.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
You know
that's,
what I would do?
That's brutal.
Have you ever had anybody like pissed off at you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, they call your dog all kind of names and stuff.
Oh, really?
That's
me. Diesel, get his neck.
Yeah, he wouldn't hurt a flea.
You know what I do? I'd have
till
like,
now.
Those little fireball shooters and like, you're going to need this.
You're going to need this.
We ain't fine.
Hey, relax.
Hey, chill out, bro.
We even wind up in court and all that stuff.
Oh, over for real?
Oh, for sure.
Over what? If you can't disclose it, you can't.
Yeah, I mean, it's an active case now, and I'm sure I'm going to be in court here before, you know.
Who you want us to trash? Let's get
No, you know, I mean, easy. Some, you know, like we talked about it before. I mean, some guys poach and we don't know. Oh yeah, I've got permission to be over there.
We're picking up what you're putting.
Fine, I'll go over there and I'll look on Onyx and say, hey, who's John Smith? Oh, that's the neighbor. That's who I got permission on. So at least he knows who John Smith, you know, I'm checking myself a little bit, but you know, you find a deer for those people and all of a sudden the DNR is knocking on your door going, hey, did you track a deer for so-and-so? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh no, here we go.
Shit.
Yep.
That can get messy.
Big time.
Okay. Very fair.
Like threats on your life, threats on your dog, the whole 9 yards.
Wow.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Over a deer.
That I found.
Yeah. And right. I can see that. I mean, Like trail cams, man, are like the best blessing and the best curse that the hunting industry's ever seen, right?
I guarantee you we've been on trail cameras before that we shouldn't have been on.
But also like trail cams make like people feel like they own deer.
Yeah.
And then that creates like this turmoil that
you shot my deer.
Yeah, it just snowballs into this, you know, thing. I mean, don't get me wrong, like if I seen somebody with a deer a tracking dog on my property and I wasn't notified, hey man, like if someone called me, hey man, I had shot a deer, it ran onto your ground. Do you mind if I go look for it? I got a tracking dog with me. They said, I'll meet you out there. We'll go look together.
Yeah, I want to be there.
Yeah, like, yeah,
I'd rather 100%. Go with.
Yeah, yep. Come help.
But if you don't call me, I get it. But also, like, that's not your responsibility to know that you are expecting that. How someone says, know? Hey, I have permission to be here. Yep. You have to, okay, he has permission to be here. You called me. I'm here to help you. You tell me you have permission. I have no reason to believe you.
Right.
You should be able to trust that guy.
You should. Again, we get either advertently or inadvertently, we get lied to, but it's the pressure about you got to find the big buck. You got to, you know what I'm saying? It's like, and you'll do anything. You'll break the law to go get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the biggest tragedies that we see, that I see on a track. I kind of figure this deer is dead and we get up to a fence. And, oh, we can't go over there. Well, call and ask. I think this deer is dead, but it's a good point in a track to have a conversation if you don't think it's dead, because hey, I don't think this deer's dead anyway. Even I wouldn't call the neighbor. We can if you want, but you know, no, he won't allow anybody to track deer in that property. So he's going to let the deer rot? Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Like, that's so disappointing.
That is.
It happens though, man. What a bummer.
It's not right.
I had a neighbor call me last year, one of the first times. Probably second or third time. Hey man, I shot a deer. It jumped your fence. Where I'm like the land caretaker, I guess. Hey, can I go look? I said, yeah, man, I'll meet you at the fence. Let's go. Like, hey, you start on your side. I'll meet you on my side where I think you're talking, and we'll go look.
Yep.
You know, and it ended up being, I'm like, hey, I think you're in the high shoulder area or the scapula. And it turns out I was right. Thank God. But, you know, I'm like, man, it's not looking good.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's like we are cool about it. You know, right. Like that's, we're neighborly. Like, and now I know if it ever happens to me, I can call him and he'll meet me at the fence and 100%. We'll go together. You know, that's what's cool about it. So,
and even if you're a non-hunter and don't believe in it, you're still going to let the deer rot in the woods because you don't believe in hunting. That's even bigger waste.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But I don't think those people think right.
They don't.
Well, I had a guy last year, boy. I thought we were going to jail. I mean, literally found his deer on his putting green in his backyard.
Really?
And my hunter says, oh yeah, we got permission. Let's go. I said, are you sure? Because I stopped East Hold the Road. I said, are you sure? He gets on the phone. Yep, 1,000%. All right, let's go. $1 million home, big glass gable end of this house. And he's got a manicured putting green around this pond. And there's the deer, 160-inch deer laying like 5 feet from the cup.
All in one.
Talk and about a hole in one.
We're high-fiving, taking pictures. And my wife was with me. And she goes, house. And I look up at the house and I hear this guy is storming out of his house. And I'm like, this is not good.
No.
And he had his hand in his pocket. And I'm like, boy. Oh, no. Shit. And I turned around the hunter and I said, this is your deal. Ain't mine.
Yeah.
He looks pissed. Oh, and he was.
Do you have a contract that you bring?
It's useless.
Really?
You can't give me permission to trespass.
Is there a contract, though, that says, like, you're a dickhead and you lied to me and now this is your responsibility?
Well, that contract is on my phone and in your contact because I'll never track for you again.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put myself or my dog in that position.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, it's not worth it.
There needs to be, I wonder if there's some sort of, like, because you're a contractor. Mm-hmm. You're a contractor for hire, more or less, for this job that needs done.
For a service.
Is there something that protects contractors? There's got to be some sort of contract somewhere that, do you know what I mean? You know what I'm getting at here? Like if I hire a guy to demo this house and I don't own the house, but I claim that I do and I hire him and pay him. And then and then it's like, oh fuck, you just destroyed my house. Like, well, I was hired to do it.
What are you doing?
Maybe that's a bad analogy.
It kind of is a bad analogy. I'm just having a thought of like, yeah, I own that house, demo it, but you don't own it.
You're like, cool. All right, money in hand. Let's get to work.
I think that there's some teams that will have the hunter sign a waiver
right?
Saying, "Hey,
bad example." Sorry, Eric, but
I know it's funny.
But waivers aren't, the DNR don't care about waivers. They might sway an opinion one way or the other, and saying, "Hey, I, you know, the guy told me that he had permission. I don't have any other choice. What am I supposed to do?"
Yeah.
And he signed the waiver, saying, "Yeah, it might get you off, but ignorance of the law is not. You just can't not follow the law because Kurt said I could.
Right.
Okay, I'm looking for a loophole for you.
Yeah.
I just figured there'd be something in there. You
it's
know?
My house. Who are
you people? Okay. Bad analogy. My bad.
Yeah, you're living in your house and an excavator just shows up and starts tearing down your roof.
Tearing off your deck. Okay, my bad. It made a good laugh, though.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot to consider, man. But a lot of great info.
Yeah. For sure.
I think our listeners are going to learn a lot from this. I know I learned a ton. And if they need you this season, find you.
Go to my Facebook page, Diesel the Deer Tracking Dog. You can find us there. My phone number's there.
Perfect. And if you ever come to the studio, the sticker's on the beer fridge.
Take a picture of it.
I told them, I said, this is going to get, so many people are going to take pictures of the sticker right here. They're going to grab a beer. Oh, that's good info to know.
I'd love to see it.
It'd
be great.
Because when you need it, you need it. And a lot of people don't know where to get it, really.
I mean, that's the newest business card. It's just taking a picture of a sticker somewhere.
Yeah.
I often joke sometimes we're like lawyers. You don't want to see us, but you're glad we're
you're
there.
You're glad you called.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
You're glad I called that guy.
I'm glad I called that guy.
I hope I never need him, but, you know, thank God he was there.
Yeah.
You know, I know you want to wrap this up. You know,
we can do whatever we want.
One of the big things that I hear, you know, with hunters all the time is, I called you, you never called me back. Well, first of all, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But a normal tracking day is 12 to 14 hours long. We're on the road. We start before light. A lot of times we're coming home after dark. I get 30 calls a day during the rut. I get just as many texts and messages. And it's like, you know, I've got 3 or 4 tracks lined up. I'll get to you when I get to you. And it's like,
you only do so much.
It's the best I can do. Yeah. And you're at home. You're completely exhausted. You got dogs to feed, laundry to do, boots to dry, equipment to charge. And you've still got 17 calls that you haven't gotten to. Mm-hmm. And it's daunting. You are exhausted. All you want to do is eat and go to bed. And you've got all these people that you're supposed to get back to. It's not, we don't do it on purpose. But a lot of us have said for a long time, it's like, I wish I could hire a secretary
to screen calls and all that.
To help us at least give a hunter, you know, hey, I got your call. I can't get to you. I'm sorry. Sometimes we can't even do that.
Right. Days of the season, what percentage of them are you tracking?
What do you mean in terms of like dates?
Yeah, it could be how many days out of the season, like a percentage of days out of like a 3-month season?
Well, we'll be hunting heavy the first week. There'll be a lull, second, third week, the normal lull.
Like, are you doing one a day? Is there a time where you'll do 2 a day and not 1 the next day, and then 3 a day the next day?
With one dog, depending on how the tracks go, non-recoveries are much longer than recoveries. Our average recovery distance last year was 571 yards, or 671 yards, somewhere around 600. Our average non-recovery distance was like 2,700 yards, so like mile and a half. So if we're on a string of non-recoveries, non-dead deer, my dog is going to be wiped a lot sooner than if we had bang, bang, bang. If we go 600 yards and we do it in 20 minutes, my dog hardly spent any energy. And if I'm on to the next track, I'm good. Mm-hmm. But 3 or 4 tracks a day is pretty much max for one.
It's pretty impressive, though.
Yeah.
Even, like, that's more than I thought it would be.
We miles and miles and miles. I start my dog in the beginning of the season 5 to 8 pounds more than his tracking weight because I know I can't put it on faster than he's going to lose.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Does he eat a raw diet? Like, it's like raw meat?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's a structured raw diet and has nothing to do with tracking or drive or anything. That's all
gluten-free.
Just for health.
Gluten-free.
Vegan. Yeah. He's on that protein diet, bro.
Yeah. I can get bison pretty protein cheap. Shake. We feed a lot of bison in, but it's a balanced raw diet. But, you know, he'll go from like 20 ounces a day in the off season to 40 and 50 ounces during tracking season and fed 3 or 4 times a day.
No shit.
Well, I mean, he's burning 4,000 and 5,000 calories at 55 pounds. I mean,
he's got to keep it on. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
What's the hottest day of the year you get the most calls?
Oh, that's,
I was just wondering if you knew, like November 11th.
Good info.
No.
Do you log this info somewhere?
Hunter, all of it.
That's very cool.
I would say first week of November, when the mature bucks finally start hitting daylight, that's first week of November. November 5th, 6th, 7th is smoking hot. Mm. Once shotgun hits, it tanks.
Mm.
But that from Halloween on, it's rock on.
It's rocking.
Awesome. If you want to know when the deer are going, call a tracker or taxidermist.
Yeah, I'm going to call you.
Or taxidermist.
Should I go to stand today?
Yeah. Very cool, man. Well, I'll do what I can to get you connected with DeerCast. If there's some deer tracking stuff you can throw in there,
that'd be fun.
A lot of information.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing this, man, and kind of educating our listeners and letting us know and basically volunteering yourself to be bombarded this fall.
That's okay. That's all right.
You can just be the WCB community deer tracking guy.
Oh, boy. I'd be honored, but you're going to have to clone me, I think.
Well, that's all right. Have you thought about cloning Diesel?
I have thought about getting another dog, and that bond that you share with the dog, that's what makes a tracking team a tracking team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can I track with, for example, your dog? Yeah, but nowhere near as well as I can if we're a bonded pair.
For sure.
He's going to die for me, and he knows I'm going to die for him.
That's right? Cool, man.
And we're going to go anywhere. If Diesel says we're going, we're going.
Mm-hmm. How old's Diesel?
Diesel's going to be 5.
He's young, then.
Yeah, he's entering his prime.
Yeah.
He's rocking.
Very cool, man.
Yep.
It's awesome.
So it's fun and it's exciting at the same time.
Diesel.
It's fun.
We need some Diesel. Like, do you have stickers with Diesel's face? He's on that sticker.
I do. I'm getting a new logo made right now. It should be in on Friday. I'm going to have a store open, store with some merchandise with the new logo. So I'll have to get you guys some.
We'll rock it for sure. And
we'll order some.
I know you won't say this, but I'm going to say it. Tip your tracker.
Yeah.
You should be able to get dinner on the way home for you and your dog and whatever else and gas in your truck and be red blood American about it. Tip your tracker.
Diesel
you're coming out.
Diesel likes that number 7 from McDonald's, hard day at work.
Diesel wants
cheeseburger. Cheeseburger. After a find, he likes his cheeseburgers.
Okay, yeah. That's fair. Get Diesel a cheeseburger.
Yeah. You know, hunters, I take tips. Hunters treat me good. We get stiffed once in a while. It's okay. It's not a big deal. There's other guys that make up for it. At the end of the day, my expenses are covered. I got tires on the truck. I pay for Diesel's vet bills. I pay for his food. We buy gear with it. I'm good. Not doing this to make a living, but I appreciate you saying that. We work hard for our owner.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you, if I call a deer tracker and I'm on desperate, I get some people are legitimately can afford their deer tags and they're hunting for their meat and that's what they get. And I get that. And I'm sure people explain that to you if you help find their deer and you understand that as we all do. If I need help recovering a big buck, I'm going to pay what I'm absolutely able to pay on the recovery of that deer. And I think, just do what you can for the service if you guys call a deer tracker and just because but they're gonna have to call you back maybe one day and that's a good relationship to start on. So
For sure. And I end up giving back money every year to guys that overpay me. I don't if we didn't do that amount of work, I give some money back. It's not what we're doing.
It's called being a human.
Yep.
Being red blooded about it.
Yep.
And that's all you can be, man. That's what living honest is about, I guess.
For sure.
Well, thanks for coming out, man.
Yeah, thanks
for having me. I appreciate it.
It was a great podcast.
I don't know if I've learned more in an episode recently than this one.
I haven't. I learned so much shit tonight.
Yeah, and we just touched on it, guys.
Right.
Oh, well, more episodes, man.
Yeah, there's other things we can talk about.
We just tickled it.
I hope I never have to call you. But I'll call you to come back and hang out at the podcast.
Awesome. Yeah. I'd love it, man.
That'd be a good call.
It'd be great. I'd love it. Thank you.
Well, one more time, where can people find it? We'll plug all this in the episode description, but just plug everything you got.
Facebook, Diesel the Deer Tracking Dog. All my information is there. That's the hub of what we do.
Awesome.
Cool.
I thought you were going to get a lot of messages this
deer
season.
That's all right.
I told him not to read his phone number out on the podcast.
Well, it's on my Facebook page.
Yeah.
Well,
it's public knowledge.
It's one more step away.
Yeah.
You need two phones like a rapper.
And I will say like to that, though, I'm not the only game in town. There's plenty of teams out there that are just jam up teams that can find your deer just as well as we can. So another tracker in your area and if I think that they can do the job, I'm going to refer them to you first and we can go from there. But
That's what it's all about. At least they're going to use you to tap into the community.
Yeah. Awesome.
You're the gateway drug to deer tracking.
and if you're in Illinois, go to Illinois Deer Trackers Network on Facebook, and you can find 28 of us the same way.
Very cool. Doug, Eric, what you guys got?
Thanks for coming. That was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
You have to bring diesel next time.
Yeah.
Oh, I can imagine. Oh, boy.
I don't know if he'd sit here. He'd be like, what are you guys doing just sitting?
Yeah, I'd have to keep feeding him treats.
Get a steak for him. We have a bunch of cheeseburgers sitting here and just boil them up.
Oh, he'd be up on the table.
You ever give him a beer?
No.
So, I mean, real quick, before we close this up, my grandpa always said, yeah, if you give a dog a Budweiser a day, it shines his coat. I'm like, oh, yeah.
I use sardines.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's cool. He probably likes a Budweiser. Yeah.
Frozen sardines.
Budweiser and a sardine.
I love sardines.
God. Oh, I hate them. Oh, I can't even stand to touch them to give them to them.
I've never had one. I've never had a sardine.
Yeah,
what?
You're gross.
I'll bring a can and I got like four cans at home.
No,
at
all do not bring a can.
But you eat them on crackers?
No, I just eat them right out of the can.
Oh, really?
You'll sting up the whole studio.
You ever eat the oysters on crackers? Canned oysters?
The canned ones? Yeah, the little ones?
Good.
All the time.
Those are good. You like them?
Raw oysters? Yeah, good.
Yeah, those are good. I've never had sardine. I'd do it, though. I'd try it.
Yeah, they're good.
Not me. I had sardine on a pizza once, and I'm like, no.
On a pizza?
On a pizza?
That's common. That's the most common. Sardines on pizza.
No, it's anchovies, ain't it?
Oh, anchovies. That's what it was.
What's the difference? Anchovies can suck ass,
that's fish.
Right.
What's the difference?
I don't know.
Between anchovy and a sardine?
It's like eating a bass and a freaking crappie.
Both
or eating
good.
A carp and a crappie.
Oh, is that different?
Yeah, I think so.
It's all gross.
All right.
That's funny. Don't eat fish, though.
To be determined.
I'll bring a can of sardines in.
Okay, I'll give one a shot.
Okay.
Ugh. All right.
Okay, thanks, everybody. You know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you. Later.